Support for today's Puck Soup comes from Health IQ. Health IQ believes that the best way to improve the health of the world is to celebrate the health conscious through social and financial rewards. So they use science and they also use data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health conscious people, including runners, cyclists, strength trainers, vegans, and many, many more very healthy people. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/soup or mention the promo code soup when you talk to a Health IQ agent. So if you're not someone who, like me, had hamburgers and hot dogs with his family around like 5 or 6 yesterday and then chased it with a vodka sliced pizza at like 11, I don't think I would qualify.
That's a good day.
Listen, I'm not going to lie to you. It was a great day.
What are you doing barbecuing and hot dogging on a Wednesday? You just for fun?
My parents cooked. And let it be known that growing up, there were certain comfort foods for me as a kid that my mom never makes me, because every time I show up there, it's always we're going to order Chinese food or my dad's going to overcook a bunch of burgers. I don't know how everybody else's dad is on the grill. My dad, if there's any pink, it's a fucking miracle.
Oh, he's a well done.
He's an
guy.
Overcooker. Oh boy, is he an overcooker?
Did he like read some like thing on Facebook in like 2011 about like food poisoning, and now he just cooks everything too much?
No, he cooks by instinct, and his instincts have been wrong for the last 30 years.
By instinct. I remember the first time someone taught me the steak trick with your fingers.
Yeah,
that, like that blew me away. I was like, yep, right here. That's where it is.
And the most amazing thing is that he makes the concerted effort to try to make it rare. I like my burgers rare. He makes the effort. Like, he acknowledges my desire to have it rare. And then he gives it to me, and I take a bite, and it's not at all rare. And he goes, I thought I caught it in time.
It's like rare for him.
It's like rare for wood.
You can, like, just put, like, a little slice in it and just see where you're at, you know? You don't have to cut it in half or anything.
That's not how he does it. He blindfolds himself. I don't know what he does out there.
You know, you could make your own burger, you ungrateful son of a bitch. Your
but
dad's trying to cook for you.
It wouldn't
loves
be
you.
My parents cooking for me. Today's episode of Puck Soup was also brought to you by the NFL Experience Times Square.
Hell yeah.
A live action attraction. Rides and attractions, nonstop action.
Animals, goats, something too. something you can do.
The NFL Experience Times Square is a live action attraction combining interactive games, content, and state of the art 4D theater, bringing fans closer than ever to the game and their favorite teams. Once in the Future Puck Soup guest Charlotte Wilder did a whole video where she went through the NFL Experience and had a really good time.
She loves it. She's a Patriots fan, so she loves the NFL Experience.
Yeah,
much.
As a Jets fan, I'm like, I don't know. I'd like to experience – maybe I can go there and experience winning as a Jets fan. Wouldn't that be fun?
I want to go to like the Giants virtual reality booth where I just pick Saquon Barkley with the second pick every single time.
Spend your spring break at NFL Saquon. Experience. Fun for the whole family. Visit NFLExperience.com for tickets. It's a great time. Right in Times Square, you can go check out the NFL Experience, then walk outside and experience the splendor of Times Square. Times Square – NFL Experience, visit NFLExperience.com for tickets. And enjoy the show.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
Hey everybody, it's Dave. Dave Lozo. I'm a freelance writer. I do a lot of stuff. And I just want to point out at the top of the show that the Puck Soup bump, once again, has brought about greatness for a former guest. Harrison Brown is now an NWHL champion after appearing on our show.
That's right.
And that's the end of my intro part of this.
I think you're absolutely right. I'm Greg Wyshynski, by the way, of ESPN. And you're in Puck Soup. Our podcast continues to create stars. Our podcast continues to
elevate,
bring
people.
Greatness.
It does.
I think, though, I have noticed, I mentioned this morning to Ruby, we may be on a different ratio than we were in the past of the friends of ours on the show versus new people we're meeting for the first time. I feel like maybe it's gotten to be like every 4 episodes, 3 are with people that we want to talk to. And one is with a person we've never talked to before.
Oh, that's way too high. I don't want to talk to anybody. 3 out of 4? What, are you kidding me?
We're going to have some guests coming up that aren't our friends yet.
Are we?
But that's the beautiful thing. Like, even the people that come on, like Kellen, we didn't know before he came on. He's a friend now.
Yeah, but Kellen was too reserved on our podcast. You follow him on Twitter?
Yeah.
He's a lunatic.
Yeah.
And sitting with us, he's just like, I like the Sharks. The Sharks are nice.
He liked the show. He was very nervous to meet us. I think that's the problem with most people that come on the show.
That is true. We are pretty intimidating.
We're very intimidating.
Powerful. And
can you imagine being Can you imagine being a young, like, New Yorker and coming on the Mike and the Mad Dog radio show for the first time? Like, that's what it must be for most people that listen to this podcast.
They did MLB over-unders yesterday.
I heard they got reunited. It's amazing.
Dog, the Padres, no hitting, 84 wins.
I'm gonna steal this story from Jimmy Traina because I just heard it on his. By the way, congratulations to Jimmy Traina, who doesn't like hockey, will never be on this show for now being the Sports Illustrated Media podcast host. But he told the story. Did you ever hear the Michael Vick PETA story between
the Michael Vick what story?
PETA. PETA, you know, PETA, because he had the dogs, Michael Vick.
Oh, PETA.
Yeah, right. Okay, but this is the story. I think you understand it now.
I was thinking that the bread.
Traina's like, he said at one point, Francesco was talking about Michael Vick and the dogs, and he's like, dog, you know, keeps on down this path, probably going to get in trouble with PETA. And Russo allegedly goes, PETA King?
No, dog, PETA. Peter Tagliabue?
That was Paul Tagliabue. Oh, whatever.
I needed a joke.
Peter Taglianetti, Paul Tagliabue.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm thinking of.
That's what you're thinking of.
Dog Taglianetti.
All right.
Good scorer.
So did you listen to Russo and Francesa get reunited or no?
No. I was out.
I feel like it's one of these things that we all root for, and that one thing at FrancesaCon was whatever. I mean, here's the thing. I just watched the last episode of the X-Files reboot, and I feel like...
What a segue.
I feel like the X-Files reboot is the quintessential, like, be careful what you wish for proposition.
Wait, is it over now? Is it done? Or is it
it's over now because Gillian Anderson's like, I am not carrying this shit anymore. Like, she acted the fuck out of this season, and she looks amazing, and she's done bigger and better things in the X-Files now.
Has she? What else
she's
she
been...
Do?
She had her own show...
The Gillian Anderson?
No, film? She's been in a ton of shit.
Like what?
Sometimes with an impeccable English accent. God damn it.
You're telling me these bigger and better things. You can't even name a show. You're just a Gillian Anderson.
Well, first
Anderson
of all, she
lover.
Played she played a David Bowie proxy on American Gods and looked amazing.
Whatever that is.
Here. She The Fall was the big show. The Fall was this incredibly successful show that she was on.
I didn't see it because...
Critically acclaimed. It was the show that introduced us to one of your favorite actors, Jamie Dornan from... the 50 Shades of Grey movies.
Oh, that guy.
Yeah, that guy.
I was going to watch The Fall, but I haven't seen The Summer
Christian
yet.
Christian
so.
Grey. Not Alexandra Steele, but the person she's involved with,
okay.
Christian Grey.
It's Anastasia.
Whatever.
Get it together.
No, she's... Okay. American Gods, The Fall. She was on the TV show Hannibal, which neither of us, I think, watched, but it was critically acclaimed.
Everybody's like, the guest spots? She's basically like an older actress who like shows up on Law & Orders. Like, she does like the Criminal Intent, SVU,
Gambit.
Oh,
that's
like,
really interesting, because she was also fucking fairy godmother on Robot Chicken. So, case closed.
Wow.
Closing the laptop.
Bigger,
I won this debate.
Bigger and better things.
No, but like,
she's
X-Files,
back next season.
Everybody's like, oh, cool, the X-Files is coming back. And then, like, Chris Carter wrote a bunch of episodes that were dog shit. There were some real great episodes. But in the end, it all became a thing where, like, Scully had a son who was a mutant who could blow up people with his mind, which sounds really cool, but in the pantheon of the X-Files,
boy,
not so much. But my point is that
if
Mike and the Mad Dog ever did reunite, uh-huh. I don't think it would – do you think it would capture the same magic as previously?
Oh, if they like did a show on Sirius or they did a show on FAN here, people would absolutely tune in.
But would it be as good? Like, I have
was
no
it
doubt.
Ever good? It was never good. we were laughing at more than with most of the time, right? Come on.
I have no doubt that if Dan Patrick and Keith Olbermann got back together, it would be good. They would miss a beat.
He was on PTI recently with Kornheiser.
Yeah.
He's actually pretty nice.
Yeah.
Olbermann knows what he's doing.
Those two would not miss a beat.
Another Puck Soup bump. He's back on ESPN now.
Exactly. It's a delayed bump, but a bump nonetheless.
Yeah, the bump happens eventually. Did you watch the Gary Shandling documentary yet?
I saw parts of it. I've not seen the whole thing.
It's wild. It's wildly good, man.
The thing that
so well done.
That documentary did for me, though, I had never seen the interview that Ricky Gervais did with Shandling. Gervais had a talk show where it's one of these things that eventually every comedian gets to the point where all they want to do is talk to other comedians mm-hmm. about their craft.
Yeah.
It's kind of the coffee and cars of the comedians
right.
Disease. So he had a talk show in the UK where he was talking to all these other comedians. And what happened was he had an interview with Shandling. He's like, oh, can I do this interview with you? And Shandling's like, yeah, we can do it. If you can appear on the Larry Sanders DVD doing commentary, we can do it. And so they schedule this interview at Shandling's house. And Shandling was under the impression that Gervais was going to do the commentary track for the Larry Sanders DVD, and then they would do the podcast or whatever, the fucking TV interview after it. So Shandling comes home, and Gervais and the TV crew are already in his house. And, like, he's literally, like, taking off his prescription sunglasses. Oh, good to see you. And then putting in, like, contact lenses and shit. Like, he is clearly not prepared for this, but they're filming.
Yeah.
So the rest of the interview, and I watched the whole damn thing. It's, like, on five – if you want to watch it, it's, like, in five parts on YouTube. Is Gary Shandling literally no-selling the entire interview to Gervais and being – and Gervais being like, so, yeah, who are your influences? And Shandling's like – I can't believe you dress like this for an interview of this nature. The things that you're wearing now don't even look good to anyone. And just like completely ignoring the premises of questions and kind of needling Gervais and being like, do you feel like you've accomplished all you want to accomplish in your career? Because why would you feel that way?
Are you offended? Am I offending you by being in your house? Is that what it is?
So it's within the comedy circle, it's like a legendary interview. So I was like, how did this happen? Why did this happen? And I come to find out that it's because they got there before they were supposed to. And Shandling, like in the interview, he's like, you know, I was at that moment, I decided it was going to be like a boxing match where I was just going to, you know, rope-a-dope him for the entire interview and not give him anything. I'm just like, what a beautiful dick that man was.
I had no idea that, because this was right before, I guess I was still a kid, I had no idea. Like, he was basically down to him and Jay Leno for Carson, so I had no idea.
Yeah.
Like, I always thought Leno, like, screwed over Conan and he screwed over Letterman. I had no idea that also Shandling. Like, how did Jay Leno rise above those three people that are clearly more talented and funny than he is? It's insane.
He kissed the right asses and hid in a closet once to listen to
the Gary Shandling show is why he wouldn't do it on you. I had no idea that like he was just so more into the Gary Shandling show that he's like, screw the Tonight Show.
Right.
Like, he just grew past
and,
it.
And that's crazy. Why Larry Sanders was so brilliant, because he was completely obsessed with late night and he had all this shit to work out.
And Hank's assistant on that show was his girlfriend in real life.
Right.
I didn't know that. Like, so much about Gary Shandling, I really didn't know. It was just
I caught it. It's a great love letter. And like Judd Apatow's book, in which, spoiler, he talks to a bunch of comedians about their craft, is also really good. The Shandling part's really good too. Imagine if the show was just a nonstop string of podcasters that come in and we're like, so when you tune the Yeti mic, which one do you put it on? The one where it's like the big spray or the two little circles linked together? All the podcasters in the audience are dying right now, by the way.
I didn't want to say anything, but next week we have Zach Braff coming in to talk about his podcast show.
Now, Zach Braff on his new sitcom is the head of a podcasting company.
I can't think of a less interesting premise than Zach Braff as a family man running a podcast company.
Does that make him – do you think he's trying to be Scott Aukerman, or do you think he's trying to be Chris Hardwick is the question?
Well, Adam Carolla has one too.
Oh, is he trying to be Adam Carolla?
I don't know. I don't know what he's trying. I don't know what it is.
When I think of Adam Carolla, the first name that pops into my mind is Zach Braff.
Zach Braff narrating again for fucking 15 seasons. Oh, Jesus, God.
It's fine. You know what? You don't have to watch it. You know why? Because the playoffs are almost here.
Thank God.
As we do the show today on a Thursday, March 29th.
2018.
The year of our Lord.
The year of...
The Washington Capitals are leading the Metro. The Penguins are second. The Philadelphia Flyers are third. Would you rather see Penguins Columbus in the first round or Penguins Flyers? Let's get that out of the way first.
Oh, fuck Columbus. I don't want to watch any Columbus playoff series. Columbus has no rivals. They're just a faceless team.
They have one rival, but it's a one-way rivalry. It's a punch-up. It's a punch-up with the Penguins right now.
That's not a rivalry.
Well, that's – but no, it's like when
– Don't
when
sell
we
me
were
the
kids,
Wednesday night rivalry.
When we were kids, the Devils-Rangers rivalry wasn't a rivalry either. It was the Devils thinking that there was a rivalry, and the Rangers are like, who the fuck are you?
No, but
– weren't you just in Colorado?
I think the Rangers would still take joy out of pounding the Devils back in like the 80s as opposed to like now Pittsburgh. Like Columbus – they could be anybody. They could be Calgary. They don't care. I don't think they play Columbus. Like they're close in proximity, relatively speaking. But I don't care.
I think if I'm Columbus, I don't want any part of Pittsburgh in the first round because you can't beat them. They got two basic problems, Columbus, as a playoff team. Bobrovsky can't win in the playoffs. He's not good.
Wow.
And they can't beat the Penguins. So get away from the Penguins. You solve one problem. You hope that Bobrovsky figures out his shit in the playoffs.
So I was saying this on the other podcast.
Oh, the Biscuits podcast.
On the Biscuits. For all year, I've said this here too, I've been very much a Predators, Penguins, Tampa over everybody else guy all year. I'm kind of starting to not feel that way anymore. I still like Nashville. Still very much a Nashville guy. But I don't know if there's really any team in the East where I'm like, I don't want to play that team in the first round. You know how people do that? Oh, you don't want any part of so-and-so.
I
think every lower-seeded team in the East could win in the first round.
Boston at the height of their powers. They're real good. Like, when they're healthy, they're real good. The question is, how healthy are they going to be entering the playoffs? And what you're basically saying is that despite having a gaggle of Gasparilla Pirates on this bandwagon going, "Arr, ye aren't allowed to jump off there, Lozo," you've leapt off the Lightning bandwagon.
At some point, man, if you're going to play Dan Girard in your top four in the playoffs, man, it's gonna go sideways at some point. It could be the first round, it could be the fourth round, but it's going to happen.
It is less a problem with them playing Dan Girardi because, quite frankly, Ryan McDonough, who I literally in my mind called Martin but didn't let the words come out.
three defensemen outside,
Tampa, Florida.
Tampa, Florida.
Playing with Ryan McDonough cleans up a lot of those problems. But the real problem is that you have a goalie that's never played this many games in his life and is not playing well.
Oh, you're turning against your boy.
And he is turning into a pumpkin. Pekka Rinne has cleared out the space on his mantle for the Vezina.
Oh, yeah, he's
printed a Vezina in a 3D printer to then just put it there until he gets the real thing.
Well,
Who are you going to give it to instead of Pekka? Gibson?
Yeah.
No one's watched him.
That is a problem.
And also, everybody remembers what Pekka Rinne did in the playoffs last year. He's going to ruin the award based on that.
Pekka Rinne is basically – it's funny. A week ago, I was looking at their stats, and they're super similar. But, like, Pekka Rinne's done, like, just enough more in his extra game. Like, he has a few more wins, a few more of this, a little bit better that. So he's going to win.
He's also 35, and, like, he's not had this – this is his best regular season. Pretty much. Like, he's going to win in a walk. Now that Vasilevsky has turned into a pumpkin, he's going to win in a walk. And I'm seriously concerned. Like, I would be a little bit more bullish on Tampa were they still the possessors of one Ben Bishop. But the fact is that Vasilevsky's now the guy, and I don't think he's ready to be the guy.
Wow, you have sold your Andre Vasilevsky stock.
I've seen him.
Look at you. You're like Zuckerberg.
Have you seen him in the last –
yes. Selling your Facebook stock
if
before
I
the
was
playoffs?
Zuckerberg.
Look at you.
I would have mentioned this at the All-Star break because I would have had some inside information and saved myself billions. No, I'm saying that having watched this guy a couple of times, the Islander game, the Devil game, a few other games – there's just something off about him. And he's given interviews to Joe Smith, now of The Athletic, about how he's tired and shit. And just like, the last thing you want to hear is your goalie in the middle of March being like, "Woof, I'm exhausted. Sure hope I don't have to play every other night for 2 months in April and May."
That's fine. Like, ready? Here's, if I was to predict right now who's going to come out of the East, you know who I pick? You want to hear it?
The Penguins.
Want me to say, No?
The NJD?
No.
The Caps?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
I'm thinking. Like, Braden Holtby. It's weird how, like, right now, the Caps and the Devils are like, we have Braden Holtby and Corey Schneider. They're like, oh, I don't know. We do have Philip Grubauer and Keith Kincaid. And they're playing those guys a lot down there. It reminds me of the Penguins last year when Murray was hurt and we knew he was better than Fleury, but Fleury got hot at the right time. So they were just like, let's just ride this guy as long as we can. And they rode him into the Ottawa series and then he hit the wall and they were like, all right, Matt, take us the rest of the way. And that's kind of what the Devils are doing with Keith Kincaid.
You know,
like, Corey Schneider can't stop anything. It's crazy.
The biggest problem with Kincaid is this.
He's not that good.
Bowfinger wasn't a huge hit and nobody really, like 99% of the population doesn't remember it. But the fake character they cook up for Eddie Murphy as they're secretly filming him in the sci-fi movie is named Kincaid.
Oh, boy.
So literally throughout the entire movie, you have everybody like, Kincaid, so we finally meet. Kincaid, you're going to die. And like all this shit. And it's ripe for sampling on the Jumbotron. But then I think to myself that I'm literally one of the only people outside of the cast and crew that saw Bowfinger.
I've seen that movie, and I could not tell you the names of any of the characters in that
movie. It was on HBO a couple of weeks
ago.
I re-educated myself with
it. The movie's HBO reshows over and over again. I can't figure out why. Why is the edge of 17 constantly on when it should be edge of tomorrow? Don't you hate when movies do that? Like, you think it's Snatch, but it's actually Snatch with fucking Amy Schumer and Goldie Hawn. Every day that happens to me, I'm like, oh, Turkey. Oh, fucking Amy Schumer. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I'm like, HBO, oh, Flight of the Conchords is on? And it's Flight of the Navigator.
Flight of the Phoenix.
And Flight of the Phoenix, right.
That's actually not a bad movie. Giovanni Ribisi's doing a weird accent the whole time. I can't figure out why, but it's a pretty good movie.
It's fine. You know, Zach, one of those movies that's been on incessantly lately on Showtime is Zach and Miri Make a Porno, and I can't figure out why.
I can't get through that movie. I watched it, and it's fine, but like... I think we talked about this already. The scene where Tracy Lord is talking to Elizabeth Banks, and like, there's no way Elizabeth Banks is ever attracted to Seth Rogen in any form, in any character, in any like
right.
ever. And she's just like, I don't know. I don't think I need the lube. Like, all right, Kevin Smith, we get it. We know you're the Seth Rogen avatar. Mm-hmm. Blah blah blah. It's just not
too much.
It's not great. Yeah.
So you like the? In this scenario with the Capitals emerging from the Eastern Conference, mm-hmm. is it like a KHL situation where the Penguins just run out of money and then they stop playing during the playoffs?
Have you watched the Penguins lately?
Are they getting upset in the first round by either the Flyers or the Blue Jackets?
There's no team in that conference
or
right
mighty
now.
NJD.
The Penguins can't beat the Devils, for God's sakes. The Devils are like a 1.5 line
great.
Team.
As we do the show tonight, they play tonight. The Devils are now going to lose 7-2 because of this boast.
Oh, that's right. They do play
yeah,
tonight.
Thanks.
They're due. That's the thing. The Devils are undefeated against Tampa and Pittsburgh.
You ruined it.
Right. So, like, I don't know. I just... The West is Nashville for me. I'm still... I don't love Winnipeg like everybody else does. Toronto can't hold a lead. I'm still...
No, they can't. Boy, last night, you knew that was going to happen.
3-0. It's like, all right, it's going to get to 3-2. Let's see what happens after that.
Yeah.
Boston, I don't trust, man. I still don't have the trust for Boston. I don't know why. Columbus is Columbus.
Toronto's kind of fascinating in the sense that, like, they're close. Like, they're close. Like, they've got the pieces up front. They need to add what to the blue line? Like, two guys?
Oh, yeah,
like
for
two
sure.
guys?
It could be four. I mean, they just need better guys. Like, if they're not going to be able to get a number one, it's so hard to get a number one defenseman unless they, you know, trade for Erik Karlsson.
Well, what they need to do is convince Drew Doughty to leave California, which I don't know if anybody can do. But,
well,
like, that'd be the guy in 2 years.
Doughty's got one more year, right? Well, what if the Kings miss the playoffs this year? And they're just like, what are we doing here? We're just going to tread water in eighth place forever? You know, Maybe they trade Doughty this summer.
The Erik Karlsson thing's really interesting because obviously Eugene Melnyk just does not fucking care about his fans.
Oh, none.
And so, like...
He got his organ. He's fine. He's got all he needs.
So the idea that he could trade Erik Karlsson or order a trade of Erik Karlsson to the Leafs next year is not out of the realm of possibility in my mind. Like, he doesn't really... He doesn't care.
No.
He does not care.
He'll order it.
Yeah.
What are we getting? We're going to get Matt Martin and Garrett Sparks. Done. Mm-hmm. Done.
Yep.
But Doughty... Yeah, they need at least two better, good defensemen. And they might have, I mean, I don't know, they'll be better next year, but they're vulnerable. Every team in the East feels vulnerable to me.
The Florida Panthers, as we do the show, 85 points, the Devils 88, Columbus 91. It's looking very much like it's the Devils are bust for the Panthers. Panthers have a game in hand.
Well, Flyers are still kind of eh.
They both are in action tonight, by the way. You think the Panthers are going to catch the Mighty Devs, or do you think the Devs are good?
Well, I was doing the old math, the old analytics,
ooh,
as the kids call them.
Wow.
And the Panthers had two games in hand at the time, and the Devils obviously had two fewer games because that's what two games in hand
Thank
mean.
Thank you. Awesome.
And the Devils had, what do they have left? They had Carolina. They basically had whatever it was. Say if they had seven games left, like four they were supposed to win and three were kind of like could go either way. And let's say if they go 4-0 in the games they're supposed to win and 1-2 against, I forget, they play three good teams. I think
the Devils have Pittsburgh, Islanders at home, at Montreal, Rangers, Toronto at home, at Washington.
Right.
So they both have four home games left.
Right. And they already won the Carolina game they were supposed to win. And Florida lost in Toronto, a game they're really not supposed to win. So Florida, I think, kind of still has the game in hand in a way because they have some easier games left. They play Boston three times, which
is a problem.
They
got Boston three times, Buffalo, Nashville, Carolina.
Yeah.
The Boston three times thing is – I mean, two of those will be against Boston. One will be against Providence.
Three times, Greg.
Three times.
They never said you went three times.
Wow.
How's that for a reference?
That's a good pull.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think the Devils are probably still going to get there. But I just – the whole riding Keith Kincaid to the finish line thing would just worry me a little bit.
It worries me that they have to play the Islanders and the Rangers. Those are two games that could easily go sideways.
Oh, man, the Islanders and Rangers are so done. You got to get three out of 4 points.
I'd like to think that you have to get 4 points out of those. And then I think Florida's got the more favorable schedule in that they have four straight home games versus having their home games broken up like the Devils do.
The Devils might also have an advantage too, because their last game is against the Caps, right? So the Caps might be like, screw it. We have nothing to play for.
And the big advantage for the Devils, they only have one back-to-back, while Florida has – this will be – tonight is the first of three that they have down the stretch.
Yeah, like if they play – who do they play? They play some Montreal tonight?
They got Ottawa tonight. Ottawa, then they go Carolina, Nashville, Buffalo, and Boston end the season.
Like if they lose – like I think if Florida – I think the way I figured it out was if Florida doesn't lose any of the games they're supposed to win, I think they've got a really good chance.
I can't believe we went through this entire segment without me going, all right, Ottawa, Boston, Carolina, Nashville back-to-back, Boston again. Then you got Buffalo and Boston back-to-back at the end. This is like, I don't understand how we do an entire first segment on Mike and the Mad Dog
loss,
and not recognize that we're doing over-unders, basically.
Win, loss, win, 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 loss, under,
let's
over.
Let's pause on Carolina for a second, by the way. Bill Peters has an out in his contract. Do you think he takes it or do you think he gets fired? There's the mutual parting of ways, I guess, right?
What does he have left? Like a year?
I guess probably a couple of years, like maybe a year left. I don't know. But like new GM gets new coach. I mean, and this guy has not gotten results, mainly because of Scott Darling, but also because they've not gotten the results. So he's probably gone, right?
Yeah, how many of those goals in the Devils game were Scott Darling's fault, by the way? None.
None goals.
That's every fucking game. Carolina sucks. Carolina sucks structurally in their own zone so bad.
So Bill Peters should go.
He should go. They should make it. I mean, well, it depends on what he gets in the mutual parting of ways situation if he takes the out. Like, does he have a job lined up? I feel like he would have a job lined up for some reason. I don't
know. If he was going to leave?
I'm not saying
head coach of the Seattle Whatevers?
Nah, that's too far away. That's 2 years. It's 2 years.
Yeah.
Jerry Gaunt hung around for like 4 months at a rest stop and then hopped on a bus.
Get himself fired and then you collect.
Go Costanza.
You collect for a year and then you go coach Seattle. Where do you think Alain Vigneault is going to end up?
On TV.
You think so? Because here's the thing. I feel like Gullitson's going to get fired in Calgary.
Oh, you don't want Alain Vigneault behind your bench, man.
Why?
I'm telling you.
Why not?
He's dog shit.
First couple of years, Alain Vigneault with the talent on that roster, that defense, he'll make something out of it. Here's my bold prediction.
He won't get everything out of it he should.
Alain Vigneault goes to the Calgary Flames.
You're not watching enough Ranger games.
The Calgary Flames will be in the Stanley Cup final. The final within the next 2 years.
See, like, that's such a bad prediction that I won't even bet you on it because I don't want to just take your money so easily. That's insane. Next two years.
This is not a wager. This is a fact.
Either in 19 or 20, the Calgary Flames are going to come out of a conference with the Predators, the Jets.
Yes.
I'm not going to say Vegas because I don't think they're going to do this.
Now, who will be their goalie? Henrik Lundqvist to reunite with the coach he loves.
Yes, yeah. By the way, that's the thing I love, too, about, like, Alain Vigneault. Someone says, like, coming down the stretch here, you know, you're gonna see what the kids can do. You're going to maybe shut down Lundqvist for the season. And he's like, yeah, you go tell him that. Yeah. What are you, an asshole? You're the coach. Go tell him he's not playing. Yeah. He's 300 years old. Put him on the bench if he doesn't get hurt.
Yeah. Oh, you tell him that. Well, isn't it your job to tell him that?
I know.
And then it's like,
oh, my God.
What happens if you tell him he gets mad? They fire you, which they're going to do anyway?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, go out a blaze of glory, man. Like, be like, I'm starting Pavlik the rest of the way. Okay. You should be tanking.
Shut down.
Like, the Rangers, if they really tanked hard enough, they could have got, like, into the bottom five. Instead, they're, like, running Lundqvist out there to make 47 saves. Like, why?
It doesn't seem like anybody wants to tank. Like, does fucking Arizona know? Do they know? Do they know what their roster looks like?
What a dumbass organization that is, man. Like, I love seeing people on Twitter that are like, this is a good sign for next year.
Yeah, this is an inspiring thing.
Why?
A fucking garbage time team. Like, yeah, it's like watching a garbage time 12th man on the bench come out and score 7 points for the Nets.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, this is really – he's going to get a real encouraging boost for next season. Like, who gives a fucking shit? You know what's going to be encouraging? If they play well in October next year. You know, this is nonsense.
Remember all those years when Columbus would close the year like 9-0-1 and people would be like, coming up next year, here we go. And
then you know what would be encouraging next year if you started the year with fucking Oliver Ekman-Larsson on one pairing and Rasmus Dahlin on the other one? That'd be really encouraging.
Like, it would have to work out where they wind up in the slot that wins the lottery because they got hot. Then you can be like, see, it worked out. But, like, the goal should not be that.
Oh, and that's the shit that I'm really getting fucking sick of. Is everybody praising Arizona and being like, you see, this is why they should adopt the gold plan, where you encourage teams to play well after they're eliminated in order to get a higher draft pick.
Mm-mm.
No.
This is why my plan is the only one that works.
What? Well, oh, what?
Fuck it. Everyone gets in. The winning matters now.
WYSIWYG or whatever. What did you, NIMBY, what did you call it again?
WYSIWYG.
FizzyWig. What is it?
WYSIWYG. Look at you, you friggin' former sports editor on a desk who knows what WYSIWYG is.
What was it again? What? Fiji?
What you see is what you get.
Feige? What was the name of your plan?
Fuck it. Everyone gets in.
Right. So Fiji.
Fiegi? Fieri?
Right.
Fiegi?
Fieri.
Like
right.
Like right now, if you're a Coyote fan, you're like, shit, we're screwing up our draft pick, but man, we got a chance to make a run.
The Fieri plan.
The Fieri
plan. We got
plan.
Diners, drive-ins, dives, and 31 NHL teams making the playoffs. All the next on an S triple D.
Tell me you saw the Thanos as Guy Fieri meme that was going around.
That was great.
He's got like the blonde hair, the sunglasses, and he's holding up the hand, and he goes, I'm looking for the Flavor Stone. It's really good. It's a good piece of Twitter.
In the Western Conference, keep in mind there's a bunch of games tonight. Nashville 109, they obviously get the first seed. Winnipeg and Minnesota. It's a fun matchup. I mean, it ain't going to be a good series. Winnipeg will probably roll them in four, but like at least it gives you a chance to get reacquainted with that geographic rivalry. The old North Stars and Jets rivalry. Back in the day when it was Teppo Numanen and Alex
someone
Steen's,
out there.
Alex Steen's dead. Thomas Steen. And oh, the North Stars had many Bruttons. Oh, the Bruttons in the world they had.
That's Milwaukee.
No, Bruttons, oh, like Aaron and...
Oh, Bratton. I think
Brats.
Like Brats. I thought there was like, you know, it's been
like
been
a Bratton. Sour, like a sour Bratton? Oh, was
Bring
that...
it on. Oh, it's been Bratton.
How could that headline not have existed in the Star Tribune at some point?
What's that?
Sour Bratton, Neil demands trade. Or some shit.
Wait, what's a sour Bratton?
You know what a sour Bratton is?
Oh.
Oh my God.
You and your crazy German
sour
heritage over here.
Sour Bratton. Okay, ready?
Mm-hmm.
From our friends.
Is it a brat? Or is it just like a thing?
Sour Bratton is a German pot roast that can be prepared with a variety of meats, most often beef, but also from venison, lamb, mutton, pork, and traditionally horse.
One time on a baseball trip, me and my friends were in Milwaukee.
I stuck a bat. Oh, sorry.
My friend Jeff, who is always miserable on these trips because he hates baseball, booked us a Saturday night dinner. We usually do a nice Saturday night dinner, and he picked this German place, right? So we drank all day, and we're hungry, and we go in this German place, and I think he ordered for us. They brought out the food, and I've never been so close to vomiting on a table based on the smell and appearance of the food. I will never eat German food or go to a German restaurant ever again.
It's
was
so good.
So
he just slathered mustard on it, though.
No, but it was like the ref when she brings out her dinner, and it's all like gookins and coosins.
They're not they're coosins.
That's what it was like. And I was like, I got to go to the bathroom. I'll be right back. So that's what I think of when I
see. So what would a Winnipeg Minnesota series mean to you?
Oh, I'm
bullish on the Wild. You like the Wild?
It's just that I don't like Winnipeg as much as everybody else.
Why?
I'm not like. For years, we were all pretty much universally agreed that Winnipeg was an underachieving team and not good. And then they have one good regular season.
Oh, you're worried about Paul Maurice.
And now we're putting them into the Stanley Cup final already. It's weird.
I don't know about you, but every time I watch Winnipeg play anybody, I immediately tweet, give me seven games of Winnipeg versus this team.
That's every game anyone watches now, apparently. You're watching like a Ducks-Islanders game. Give me seven games of Ducks-Islanders.
Give me seven games of this. Put it right in my veins.
What about five or six? What if I want like
also,
a couple days off between series?
Whenever I see a free agent, a pending free agent.
Here we go.
I say to myself, you know what? You know what would be really interesting? I think there's a possibility for a sign and trade. A sign and trade, which by the way has never happened. In the history of this, since the new CBA came into effect, I believe.
Has that never, well, yeah.
It's never happened. There's never been a situation where somebody got eight and then they got traded to a team.
No, but one time Ron Wilson kind of fucked over Devin Setoguchi to get Brett Burns. He signed them in the offseason and immediately sent him to Minnesota.
But that wasn't from the fucking new CBA, though.
No, it was
since
from
2012 when they changed the rules and shit.
No, I mean, it wasn't even really a sign and trade. Right. It was just like, Devin, we want you here for three more years.
But every time we talk about John Tavares, you know what? Possibility of a sign and trade. Possibility of a thing that'll never happen because A, they're going to re-sign with their teams, and B, no one's ever done a sign and trade.
What does it benefit the player to do? To get the extra year? That's it?
I guess so.
That's why they're going to give up their free agent rights?
Well, the theory is they sign with the teams they're currently with to get that extra year. That's one of the reasons they stay,
That's what I mean. But like, say if you're a player, right?
Well,
why would you let the team do that to you?
Well, that's just the thing. Like, the benefit to the team is that they can bring down their cap hit, but the player is like, why? Like, what? I have all the leverage.
Why would they bring down their cap?
Oh, because the last year would be like slightly lower.
I wouldn't.
Not like Kovalchuk making as much money as a guy working at Wendy's low, but like low.
It's pretty low.
It was amazing.
John Tavares, man. By the way, Josh Ho-Sang. I know nobody likes Josh Ho-Sang.
No. Everybody likes Josh Ho-Sang because he speaks the truth.
I've seen some people that are just like, problem guy, blah, blah, blah. He makes a good point. Like, he hasn't been on the team for 60 games, and they're still the shittiest defensive team in the league. Like, maybe it wasn't Josh Ho-Sang that was causing the problems for the first 20. But what do I know? I just know that it's almost like he's Russian. You know what I mean? Like, he's this really skilled dude, and everyone says he can't play defense, and he can't crack the roster. But
I genuinely would like to see what happens when he leaves that organization.
Tavares?
No, Josh Ho-Sang. Because it's going to happen soon.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of these guys that I feel like is and rightfully so, has been a cause for a lot of people to call out how he's been treated in life and how the Islanders have buried him. But he's also one of these guys that when he goes to the next organization, and if this shit still happens, I want to see what people say. I want to see what people say if he goes to someplace else and they're like, this fucking guy doesn't want to learn how to play defense and shoots his mouth off and he's a problem and we're going to bury him in the AHL.
Like, I mean, I've only seen him play live a few times. He is kind of a vulnerability or a liability on the ice a little bit.
Is.
But, I mean, still, he'll score you 50, 60 points as a rookie probably. Right. And I don't know. This game's stupid.
Well, it's like how Evander Kane – remember how when the shit in Winnipeg with Evander Kane went down? Everybody's like, he's just misunderstood. You know, he's just like, you know, misunderstood. Then he goes to Buffalo, gets in trouble twice, and they're like, fuck this guy. Don't even fucking mention his name anymore. Just say number 9 or whatever he wears. I feel like – I'm not saying that Ho-Sang is going to be involved in criminal activity. I'm just saying it's interesting how like the misunderstood problematic player in one market can go to another market. Then all of a sudden it's like, fuck, well, maybe he's just kind of an asshole.
But he doesn't run his mouth off until – he's been in the minors.
Until Arthur Staple goes to Bridgeport and puts a reporter in his face.
It's not like he was running his mouth off the first 20 games he was in the NHL and that was the issue.
Yeah.
It just seems like in other sports, when you have the super talented guy, like say, for instance, Odell Beckham, he's super talented. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's kind of a, you know,
a free spirit, Dave.
He's a free spirit. Mm-hmm. I mean, dude, if you're going to have a girl in your hotel room doing coke, put the fucking phone away, man. Like, I'm just saying, eat your pizza and let her do the coke, and then you guys could fuck all night on coke
or
and pizza.
At least
turn the Snapchat off.
Have her do the coke on the phone so you can get a really cool... Like, can you imagine, like, her doing coke and then there's, like, panda ears on Snapchat? Like, how fun would that be?
By the way, that is one of my only favorite things about, like, a tweet that kind of goes viral is you discover that there are two things that still exist. One is the girl picture avatar with the dog ears and the dog nose from Snapchat.
Right.
And the dudes, it's always girls with the Snapchat, and it's always dudes that still have the Mad Men avatars.
Right! You see like a fucking Don Draper avatar. Yes. Oh, that's a great point.
How do you still have a Mad Men avatar in 2018? The point is just that in hockey, it seems like coaches can't figure out a way to manage this super talented guy who's not the perfect player when he's 21 years old. But in other sports, they seem to find a way to make it work.
Speaking of Mad Men, I mentioned on our last show with Pete Blackburn that we are binging Billions. And my first thought was that Billions was going to be like Mad Men. But it's not. Hmm. Billions is actually The Sopranos.
Oh,
it's alpha males bumping heads. It's like Malin Ackerman is the wife of a guy who's clearly a criminal. And she's trying to keep their little world together while the feds close in and shit. It's very much The Sopranos. But The Sopranos obviously never spent as much time with the law enforcement as Billions does, where we have to see Paul Giamatti. Too much of Paul Giamatti.
Apparently he's into being dominated, right?
He wants to have his
balls whipped and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, it's a thing. Oh, it's very much a thing. There's a lot of Paul Giamatti in this show.
Do you see his?
No, you just see.
Do you see his Giamatti?
You see his George the Animal Steel like body, and like strapped to a wheel with like handcuffs and shit.
It's funny that you say that. Did you see the commercials for Mitch Marner where he's like meeting with two people who are trying to do a casting call for him?
Yeah.
And like Matt Martin's in the commercial. He's wearing a super tight shirt. I never noticed, but like Matt Martin has like the physique of like a super strong guy from the 50s.
Like on the back of the comic book where it's like, we can give you this build.
Yeah.
We can make you look like Charles Atlas.
Yes, that's exactly. And like, you can tell by looking at him, he's in super great shape and everything, but like, usually, like today in like 2018, dudes are like lean and they're cut.
Right.
And like, he kind of has like a stomach. but it's muscle. You know it's muscle. And yeah. I don't remember seeing anyone look like that in this modern time of like being lean and shit.
I've always felt that the changeover was when barbells went from being giant balls on the ends of them, like old timey barbells, to being more of the discs.
Like, I feel like that's what I mean. Like, like Matt Martin works out with like old timey cartoon weights. That's why he's jacked like that. Yeah.
Right. Absolutely.
Whatever works for you, man. I got to get on the Matt Martin.
They're like, Matt, what's with the physique? I don't want sand kicked in my face at the beach.
like if you punched them in the stomach, you'd be like, oh, that's his vulnerable spot, and your hand would shatter on the absolute muscle.
That's not his vulnerable spot. He's not King Hippo. Vegas, of course, is still your leader in the Western Conference's Pacific Division. But you said that they've obviously fallen off a lot.
Yeah, they're going to lose in the first round.
I don't think they're going to lose the first round. I think they win the first round. I think they lose in the second. They're going to fall.
Got a bet.
All right, let's do it.
Let's wait for the playoffs to start. I just want to make sure you want to stick with it, because the Vasilevskiy thing you turned around on quite a quick.
No, I mean, I'll bet right now that Vegas wins first round series.
All right, done.
Okay. What are we betting?
Let's bet something interesting.
Bottle of Cointreau. We drank it the rest of it last night making...
Paul Cointreau? Who's Paul Cointreau? Yes. The bottle of what? His urine? What else? Okay. Cuato from Total Recall?
If you tweet at us, Puck Soup Podcast on Twitter, and tell us what we should wager... We will wager it.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's something interesting. I can't keep taking $20 from you and giving it back on technicalities all the time. It's no fun for me.
Yeah, it's become sort of that scene in The Naked Gun where he gives the $20 to the informant. And he's like, what do you know about this? He's like, I don't know.
What do you know about
Mike Green? Why do you want to know? And he's like, I don't know. And maybe this will jog your memory. San Jose, LA, 2-3. Whatever the combination is between San Jose and LA or Anaheim, give it to me, man. This is going to be fucking great. Like, any of those California teams play each other in the first round, it's always going to be fun. You want San Jose, Anaheim, so we get Anaheim out of there?
No, I want San Jose, LA. I hate watching Anaheim playoff games. They're fucking boring.
If it's San Jose, whoever San Jose plays, they're going to beat them.
Yeah, probably. I would pick them probably.
Yeah, so I think you get Anaheim in that series to get them the fuck out of the playoffs, right?
Well, if Anaheim plays Vegas.
Plus, you'll also get the fucking Thornton-Getzlaff battle if Joe's healthy, too. That'd be fun.
I'd rather just see San Jose play LA. That's like the only series where, like, in the first round, you know, people are like, oh, give me seven games of. That's the only one I want seven games of.
I want seven games of Nashville, LA. But actually, that's not true. Like, okay, here's the thing.
Nashville would wax LA in five.
I really want Vegas LA, but then I'm going to lose this bet because I feel like LA is going to kill him in first.
Well, who do you think Vegas beats then? And that's in the bottom of the. You think they beat St. Louis?
I think they could beat St. Louis or Colorado. Lickety split. I mean, let's face it, it's a revenge series for David Perron.
It's going to be every series for Vegas. In the Stanley Cup final. Do they want to win the Cup final, or does Nate Schmidt want to beat the Capitals?
It's going to be so fucking depressing when William Karlsson goes an entire playoff series without a point. After the season he's had.
That's what's going to happen. Is like Vegas is going to – like they've already kind of hit the wall. They're going to lose their first round series in five and everyone's going to be like, oh, was the experiment a failure? You know, like people just turn on people way too goddamn easy.
Oh, my God.
Sport.
You think that's going to really be the take? Like it's going to be like, what did they really accomplish?
There's a take out there that's like Connor McDavid shouldn't be the MVP, which is fine. But it's only because he shouldn't be the MVP because he's a solo act. Like there's idiots everywhere that are going to give
you
a take.
Yeah, there was some idiot that made the case that he wasn't valuable to the Oilers. That guy.
It was after the 7-3 Columbus loss.
Yeah, it was horseshit.
Where he was just like, oh,
which was really funny, by the way. I mean, as someone who is not going to be giving his heart vote to Connor McDavid, all this shit of like, oh, so valuable. It would have been 7-0 without Connor here his 3 points.
Already, I've got to tell you, I've been working on an impression.
Oh, please.
We do impressions on the show.
We do?
I haven't really.
I was unaware of that.
I haven't really practiced it too much, so if it's a little rusty. Mm-hmm. This is my impression of someone who, for the last 2 months, has been touting Nikita Kucherov as the MVP, waking up last week in the morning and seeing Connor McDavid pass Kucherov in the points race. Ready?
Go ahead, yes.
Connor McDavid should be the MVP. Thank you. That's my impression. Nikita Kucherov's not the MVP anymore. Now it's Connor McDavid because he has 4 more points than Nikita Kucherov. I love it. I love this sport. I love the people who cover
it. Dave, at the Actors Studio, we don't often ask for things in the moment, but if we might have a moment to talk to guy who has been touting Andrei Vasilevskiy as the runaway Vezina winner, having seen the way Andrei Vasilevskiy has played in the last month.
Okay. So I was watching Star Wars. And Andrei Vasilevskiy's play reminded me very much of Obi-Wan Kenobi's role in the original Star Wars, where early on he was extremely helpful and he was there for the rebels, and then he let himself get killed and he left.
And Dave, when you go to the pearly gates and you see Saint Peter in front of you, what would you like him to tell you?
How the iTunes podcast ratings work.
Listen, the answer on Inside the Actor Studio, there's only one answer to the when you die and go to the pearly gates and see St. Peter question. Mm-hmm. What do you want him to tell you? And the answer is always, good job. That's what they always say. And then everybody claps.
Is that what
they Ladies say? And gentlemen, Kevin Spacey. Everybody claps.
I didn't see the ending to The Usual Suspects coming.
All right, St. Louis, Anaheim on the bub right now.
The bub.
Colorado, 1 point back of both as we do the show. Dallas, they're cooked. Does Colorado get in here? Do they make the thing? Do they do the thing? Or is it St. Louis and Anaheim and the Kings that end up in the playoffs instead?
I feel like Colorado is going to be the team that misses still. I think I was on Colorado last time we did this, right? Colorado was a point out. They kind of made a little push, then they kind of fell back a little bit. Hmm. I just like, I don't know. What's the remaining schedule? Do you have it in front of you?
Yeah, I do, Mikey. Versus Chicago, at Anaheim, at LA, at San Jose. Three in California in a row. Yeah. Good sunshine out there, but not the easiest games.
Dog, I'm going to say 2-2 in that stretch.
Versus St. Louis to close the season, Mike.
In St. Louis?
No, they're at home. They're in Colorado.
The problem is that like I think Colorado's better than St. Louis, but I feel like Colorado is just going to – that 3-4 in Cali, that's never good, man.
It's not good.
Like the Devils were 3-0 on the road trip in there, and they went 1-2 and got smoked twice.
And they're also getting slammed with the goaltending injury bug right now too. I feel like they're going to fall short too, which sucks. But
so what happens then with your MVP vote?
Well, we'll talk about that in a second. But first, if you want to watch any of these playoff games, there's only one way to do it.
Connor McDavid for MVP.
That's with SeatGeek. Buying tickets to sports and concerts can be complicated, confusing, but there is a better way to buy, and that is with SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the smartest, easiest way to get tickets to every type of live event, whether you're searching for last-minute deals or planning a night out or you need the perfect gift. SeatGeek helps you find the best seats at the best prices, fully guaranteed. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats, such as the seats that I procured for myself and Ruby and my dear daughter for her first Devils game last weekend against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Yeah.
I thought about calling Tryout Services for.
She was awesome, man. She was into it. Her voice was hoarse afterwards.
That was the Carolina game?
No, it's the Tampa game.
What was the Yeah,
she saw a good one. And the best thing about it was that someone else used SeatGeek in front of us. A couple of Tampa fans were decked out in their Tampa gear in front of us. And when the Lightning scored their first goal, one of the people turned around to ask for a high five for my daughter, and she refused.
Oh, wow.
And then at the end of the game, when the Devils won, this guy, you know, it, all in good fun, turned around and wanted to give her a high five for, hey, good game, and she refused.
Wow.
And I had to tell her, it's okay now, like it's over, we won, like the good guys won, it's fine.
See, like I want the next game to be her giving double barrel middle fingers to somebody.
I told her the story about how my sister had a beer thrown at her by a Ranger fan once. I've told this on the story on the show many times, where a Ranger fan threw a beer at my sister because she started dropping f-bombs about Brodeur, like my sister to this Ranger fan, like the Ranger fan was trolling her or whatever. And then the Ranger fan threw a beer at her and hit an off-duty cop in the back of the head. Oh. And they all got, I assume, arrested or some shit.
Even your sister?
No, my sister stayed there. SeatGeek. Designed to make your ticket buying experience easier than ever.
$20 off bail. Use the promo code SOUP.
They save you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites, compare prices, and find amazing deals. Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with what, Dave Lozo?
Confidence. I like confidence.
Best of all, listeners to Puck Soup get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the app today. Enter the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P. That's spelled soup. That's promo code SOUP for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. I don't know what I'm going to do if Colorado and the Devils both miss the playoffs. Then now Nathan MacKinnon and Taylor Hall are on the outside looking in. The good news is that the Kings will get in that scenario, mm-hmm. which means the Kopitar will be in the playoffs, and he is without question a Hart finalist for me in what he's accomplished this year. I've got a long read on the Hart Trophy coming up on Friday. I don't want to give away the goose here, but suffice it to say that the arguments being made for Connor McDavid
are stupid.
Are not only stupid, but completely unprecedented in the history of the Hart Trophy since the 68 expansion.
I saw another piece of logic, too. I don't think this person has a vote or anything, but somebody – like E.J. Raddick tweeted that he doesn't think Connor McDavid should be a
finalist.
Yeah,
and then E.J. took it on the chin because he's establishment media and people were like, look at this old dumb guy.
No, it was another old guy. It was an older guy than E.J. replied and said that it was this long – by the way, when you reply on Twitter with the new length, you don't need to go the full 280. No one's going to read it. But this guy did the full 280 on E.J. and his logic was Connor McDavid is the guy who I find to be the most compelling player in the league.
Yeah.
Therefore, his value to the Oilers is stronger than everybody else's. Like, okay, it's not the most outstanding player. It's not the most compelling player. It's the most valuable player to his team. Mm-hmm. It's been that forever.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that this year it's harder than it is in most years, but you just can't give it to the guy based on your criteria that you're making up. You can't.
You can't.
If you've been doing that in the past, you should confess so we take your vote away.
Mm-hmm.
Done. That's my rant.
I think the biggest problem I have with this one is that he's going to win the Hart Trophy because too many of our colleagues are starting to turn and slowly pilot their ships towards the Isle of McDavid.
Nikita Kucherov's waving on his island. What about me? You were coming over to me for like
comrades,
the last 2 months.
Comrades, I was player of the year before.
I do change up breakaway goal like 6 times.
I was all-star. Remember Love Fest?
Like Connor McDavid's going to be a finalist. I would bet anything that he'll be one of the three.
I think he's definitely going to be a finalist. I'm honestly not convinced he's going to win, but he's definitely going to be a finalist. My biggest problem right now is that, like, I got people taking runs at me saying you hate Connor McDavid. Like, fuck, are you out of your fucking mind? Like, first of all, once in future Pucks Hoop guest.
Also got the bump, won the MVP.
Yep, won the MVP.
Right after we did.
I love McDavid. I got a McDavid jersey. He's a member of the exalted Team North America.
Best player in hockey.
He's the best. I love watching him. Mm-hmm. I'm angry at the Oilers for being this terrible that we don't get to watch more of him.
Mm-hmm.
I will, you know, admit a certain disdain for the Oilers as an organization for several reasons. But this is an argument about logic.
Mm-hmm.
This is an argument about standards. This is an argument about precedent. It has nothing. It's not like the only exceptional thing about this vis-a-vis, thank you, Connor McDavid.
There it is.
Is that these arguments are being made because it's McDavid. These arguments were not made for Kovalchuk. These arguments were not made for Rick Nash. These arguments were not made for almost any other player in the last 40 years, save for Solani and Iginla 2 years. That's it. Otherwise, this is just like some bullshit that Oilers fans are bored, so they decided to start rallying for Connor for the MVP. And the analytics community decided that they could disrupt the whole thing because they've got some numbers to back up his value.
That's the thing. This is what I wrote about when I did my MVP thing, where like Mike Trout now in baseball is going to win the MVP forever, no matter how bad the Angels are, because of the stat war.
And also because there are fucking 10 teams that get in the playoffs, a few of them for cameo appearances in baseball versus fucking 16 in hockey.
No, but it's still, though, like that's what people base it on, because wins above replacement is basically like how you would determine value, right? Even though like that's an equation, it's a formula, you know, it's not necessarily like airtight.
Mm-hmm.
Hockey doesn't really have a system for war just yet. But if there was, McDavid would probably be like 17,000 games above the next closest guy. And that's what people are going to base the value, quote unquote.
Eventually every other analytic community in sports steals from baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But what are we going to do for the next 10 years? Just give McDavid the MVP no matter how good his team is? Like
Gretzky had that run too. Like Gretzky won the MVP every year because like who the puck is more valuable than Gretzky? The only difference is that Gretzky was, you know, scoring 200 points and getting his team into the playoffs every year.
Like if you I don't know, I can't tell you what the difference is between like Gretzky and like the next four guys, but like if it's McDavid with 101 and then like three guys between 97 and 93 points, like that's not he's not far away. Yeah.
Yeah, like the year Mario won being 1 point out of the playoffs, like I think he was like 30 points clear of the next guy for the Art Ross.
That's you can so make the case when it's like that now.
Simply winning the trophies does not mean that you had a year above and beyond what McKinnon. And the thing about like listen, I've made the argument you got to be in it to win it. I am if not anything as a you know, approaching middle-aged white male. Very open-minded.
Yeah, you passed that middle age like 5 years
ago. Go fuck yourself.
We're the same age, man. We're.
I plan with the advent of nanotechnology. Yeah. I plan on living a lot longer, so I don't think I'm at middle age yet.
So when you kidnap Emilio Estevez using the free jack system,
right.
Put your younger older self in his body.
In his body, right?
How old will you be when you do that? Technically, that's the end of that life. Right?
I will be probably around 80.
Yeah.
And then, you know, obviously, you know, Mick Jagger is going to chase me. You know, he's a free jack man.
He's jacking. And he's free.
Who can forget the classic line from Free Jack? Hey, he's a free jack man.
I feel like Anthony Hopkins has been 80 years old in every movie since 1992.
I know.
Like, if you go back and watch Silence of the Lambs, like, he looks youngish for his age. But, like, I feel like ever since that movie, he's been, like, Odin's age.
He was youngish in that movie, but, like, compared to, obviously, that's the way age works. But, like, he still looked like he was fucking 65.
Yeah.
He still looked like grandpa with the slick back hair.
But, like, he looked like the kind of person who could do the stuff he does and, like, killing people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
oh,
now.
Yeah. Like, in Hannibal, when he's doing more shit than he ever did in Silence of the Lambs. Like, he's literally biting people's faces off and disemboweling them and cutting Ray Liotta's head open and shit.
Is there,
like, he's built like fucking...
He's built like Matt Martin.
Yeah.
Like, in Silence of the Lambs, he has like that strong...
Yeah. In Silence of the Lambs, he's built like Matt Martin. Matt Martin and Hannibal, he's built like fucking Pudge Rodriguez.
I don't remember. To me, like, there's no bigger drop-off in sequels than from Silence of the Lambs to all the things after Silence of the Lambs. Like, fucking Ray Fiennes eating a painting and shit.
You might be right on that one. I will make the case for another stakeout.
Wait, what was... That was the one...
It was Emilio Estevez and Richard Dreyfuss.
No, but like Madeline Stowe was it in the second one. Who was the second
Rosie
one?
Rosie O'Donnell was in the second
yep,
one.
Remember right,
when they,
yeah,
they're
yeah.
like, they're like, yeah. How can... We have to take a cue from Superman 3. Let's get the hottest comedian we can and put them in this movie to really spice up things.
Well, Rosie O'Donnell's good in the movie where it's like the Dan Aykroyd and Dana Delaney. It's like the sex
Exit to Eden?
Yes, that's what it was.
Yeah. She was also really good in She was really good in this show Smilf on Showtime, where she just plays an old crazy Boston lady, which I think is kind of her purview. And then the other thing too was she was really good in, remember Beautiful Girls? That was a flick that came out during my college years. The movie with
With Timothy Hutton Natalie Portman was like
Natalie Portman was like the object of desire next door, yeah.
No, she was like 12.
Yeah, but like he had a crush on, or no, she had a crush on him.
Yeah, Timothy Hutton, yeah. Or she had a crush on Timothy.
Yeah, I don't
Hutton.
Think Timothy Hutton was. I think Timothy yeah. Hutton was like humoring her crush.
Yes, like yeah, he wasn't. He wasn't pursuing Natalie Portman in Beautiful Girls.
Two things, real quick. First of all, I don't know if you know this, but my comfort food when I'm writing at night now is Lifetime original movies.
Really?
Just throwing one on. And last night I was writing pretty late, and I put one on, and I'm going to give you the setup. There's an English teacher. He's living across the street from a girl who moves into a house.
This is the Cary Elwes, Alicia Silverstone.
It sounds like it, right? The girl ends up being in his class. She also ends up being crazy. But he never picks up on this. He goes over. He cooks her dinner. He's married, by the way.
How old is
he? Hold on. He goes over.
Is she college age?
He fixes the No. This is high school.
He's cooking her dinner?
Yeah. He goes over, he fixes her plumbing, and the water sprays all over her, and now she's got a wet shirt on.
What?
And she's doing all these things. I don't want to give away the movie, but the point of this is the idiot teacher who can't see that the crazy high school student is desiring him and is eventually going to harm his family.
Or just inviting her over for dinner is weird, too, but okay.
Chris Klein from American Pie.
Oh, yeah.
It was the greatest piece of casting I've ever seen. If you could find a guy who's like a good looking, could probably be an English teacher, but is dumb as a fucking box of rocks.
Oh, dude.
Chris
whole,
Klein.
The whole time, I thought you meant he was English.
No. I don't mean like, hello. Jolly good, then. Yeah, but,
oh, why is Chris Klein not doing
one,
an accent?
Lass? No. He's an English teacher.
Spot a tea, governor. Mm. You're going to fuck a pie.
And also, 18 million people watched the Roseanne reboot. And everyone's claiming that it's a betrayal of the character, that she's a Trump supporter on the show. I don't know if you ever watched Roseanne in the day. But, like, wouldn't that be obvious that, like, that Roseanne that we watched for fucking however long it was before the show tried to become absolutely fabulous and it sucked was a woman who
absolutely
would look at Hillary
fabulous.
Clinton and fucking hate Hillary Clinton enough that she would support Trump.
Yeah,
like, I completely buy that with that character.
So who was in office when that show was on? Was it
Clinton?
Was it Bush?
It was probably Bush and then Clinton a little bit. I want to say it was maybe it was Bush.
It might have been both. It was
Bush
on forever.
And Clinton, a little bit of Clinton, yeah.
But like, was there ever like an episode where she was just like, "I'm going to go support Bush"?
No.
I'm going to go. Like, that's what I mean. Like, now they're
we don't know what to, we don't know what her she we knew she was a feminist, but we don't know what her politics were.
But like, I saw Aaron Ryan tweeted something this morning that I thought was basically the point. Was like, there's a million shows on now that are like super woke with super woke characters. And whenever you have a show that like appeals to an underserved audience, whether it's, you know, could be gay or lesbian, or it could be just, you know, unwoke assholes.
Yeah.
You put a show on for unwoke assholes, they're all going to go to that one show. And that's why 18 million people are going to watch it.
I mean, I think it's mostly nostalgia but I also think that there is a certain the thing about Roseanne that I find interesting is that I think it's a Trojan horse. I think there's a lot of liberal politics on that show. I mean, Sarah Gilbert's like an executive producer on the show now. Like
I was going to say, like her character on the show when she was very much like a hippie-ish.
Yeah, it's not going to be the MAGA hour. I mean, it's going to be.
Oh, it's an hour show now?
No, there was two episodes this past week, so it was sort of an hour show. But like, no, I feel like it's not going to be like Roseanne's politics all over the place.
I
think
it's
going to be more balanced. But again, like the most interesting thing to me is that when people were complaining, you're like, you know, you can't make that person the center of the show. Like it's you know, I don't want to watch the show because I'm like, do you remember? No one is a fucking student of history. The most popular sitcom of the 1970s was a show where there's a giant old racist asshole and his liberal kids.
Alan Alda?
Fucking All in the Family.
Oh, MASH. I thought you were doing MASH.
I was doing MASH.
I was like, who's the old?
Like, there's precedent for this. Like, it's not going to deter people from watching the show.
But Archie Bunker was like the object of the jokes, though. You know what
I mean?
I
think she's the object of the jokes in some ways, too. I don't think it's like a situation where she's going to be like...
Roseanne in real life's kind of fucking garbage, though. You know what
she
I mean?
She is like, totally
garbage. I don't think Carol O'Connor was garbage. Maybe
that's what
was.
Made that show so interesting and back in the day is because it was like great writing, impeccable casting, and then the quality of the show would greatly vary depending on the mental state of its creator.
Right. But like Carol...
I don't want to be a housewife anymore. I want to win the lottery and go... be absolutely fabulous.
Is that how it ended?
Yeah.
By the way, for anyone who likes this show now, who's always constantly one of those people on Twitter that yells at people, stay out of politics. Well, here's a show that you like that has politics. So shut the fuck up.
Well, we're going to go into politics for a second.
What's the deal with politics? I don't get it.
The big topic of the week after this Roseanne thing was whether or not other characters on other shows would also support Trump. We're blessed on Puck Soup to have the world's most preeminent scholar when it comes to the TV show Friends.
Thank you.
And I wanted to ask Dave Lozo about the cast of Friends and who they would have voted for in the 2016 election.
I'll tell you the correct answer, and I want you to tell me what you think.
I have in front of me the BuzzFeed quiz asked this very question. Christ. So I actually have the people's results.
We're doing the BuzzFeed quiz.
Who did Chandler vote for in the 2016 election?
Hillary.
Hillary Clinton won 53% of the vote on this BuzzFeed quiz. Who did Joey vote for in the 2016 election?
It was Gary Johnson.
Now, another candidate only got 5%. The leading answer here is he didn't vote.
That's also possible.
Okay.
But my rationale is that he would vote for Gary Johnson because he thinks Johnson's funny. He would just be like, I like Johnson. That's hilarious.
You don't think there's a possibility he votes for Trump because he remembers him from TV?
No, he would totally just be like John, like I'm all for Johnson, and he would just think that's hilarious.
Hey, that guy, he ran a great business.
There was an episode where he's looking at National Geographic. He's laughing because he can see a pig's tits. So he's definitely going to be the Johnson
guy.
Good
point.
Yeah,
Monica. I mean, come on.
Oh, also Hillary.
Yeah, completely.
Of course, Hillary. I mean, they would just do Monica and Chandler do the same.
Who did
thing.
Phoebe vote for?
Jill Stein.
Yeah, that one with 61% of the vote. You don't think she would have been a Bernie?
No. Jill Stein.
Yeah, she maybe would have been a Bernie, and then like the Bernie bros would have rose up, and she's like, ew!
Jill Stein's kind of got like an older version of Phoebe thing going on.
Right. Oh, that's
what I think it would be. Yeah,
I like that.
That's like the mom.
Maybe they can recruit Kudrow to star in whatever the Fire and Fury movie is going to be.
Who?
That movie that they're doing a movie version of the Michael Wolf.
Oh, Kudrow. I think you said...
What did you think I said?
He said Cujo. I'm like, who? I was like, the
Lisa
dog?
Cujo?
Or,
like, yes, they should get a rabid dog to play Jill Stein.
Either one.
Who did Rachel vote for?
Trump.
59% of the people say Hillary, but you're probably right.
Yeah.
Like, but she would not tell anybody.
She's a rich kid from a rich family who would absolutely vote for Trump.
Right. But when it's like, who did you vote for, Rachel? Hillary. Hillary, of course.
Vote? Huh?
And who did Ross vote for?
Also Trump.
Hillary Clinton, according to this, 45%.
Wait, I don't understand. So who's deciding on this BuzzFeed thing who they vote? Is it just people are just voting?
The people.
Oh, see? They're all wrong.
But you think he voted for Trump? Why would he vote for Trump?
Same thing. He's from the same neighborhood as Rachel. He's an idiot. He's garbage.
He's a sensitive boy. I think he'd be turned off by the alpha maleism of Trump.
No, they have the same hair. terrible looking hair.
Like and finally, Gunther, Trump.
Oh, wait, hold on. That was in my second batch of this. By the way, I tweeted this like 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Gunther, Trump, Janice, Hillary, Joshua would vote Trump. Richard would vote Hillary. Paolo would vote Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Mark would vote Trump. Mm-hmm. And David would vote Hillary.
Oh, I like it. You wanted to talk about Andrew Ferentz. I did an interview with Andrew Ferentz where he talked about the NHL Green yes. Initiative and also about his new job as Director of Social Impact for the National Hockey League.
Yeah.
Speaking of politics.
What's the deal with politics?
Talking about politics.
So I love Andrew Ferentz.
Who doesn't?
I love his hippie-ish, mm-hmm. sort of crazy, progressive, leftist sort of ways. He rides a bike too much for me, but mm-hmm. otherwise I'm on board with everything.
One can't ride alone in electric cars, Dave.
Electric cars, too. He's like a younger, more handsome Ed Begley, basically, right? That's what he is. I don't like this hiring from my – I don't know if you know this about me, but I'm a little bit cynical. I have a cynical point of view about things.
Uh-huh.
And it just really feels like the NHL does not give a shit about anything Andrew Ferentz gives a shit about. But when something goes wrong now, they can just put Andrew Ferentz's name on the press release or the statement.
You work there, so you think this is a token hire?
Oh, I mean, I haven't worked there in 5 years, so like, I can't really say that.
But the mindset of that place is that they don't really give a shit about any of this, but now they have somebody who can like talk about
it. Here, 6 weeks ago, they fucking put Kid Rock at the All-Star game. So now you're telling me all of a sudden they care about inclusiveness and not just going after middle-aged white people now?
I mean, it's not so much about going after middle-aged white people, Dave. It's that Kid Rock was available and could meet the price they were asking for.
I mean, I would have got up there for $20 and done some fucking Friends theme songs. I would have performed for you.
But you're not – like he's got a modicum of fame. He was willing to – he wasn't going to the Grammys that were that same weekend.
Neither was I.
And he was also willing to work for several Tim Hortons gift cards.
That's my deal breaker. Right. It's got to be Duncan as opposed to Timmy's.
I think Ferentz is going to do good. I'll be honest with you. The one part about our interview that kind of gave me a little bit of pause was this notion that street hockey is going to be the key that unlocks the sport for like communities that don't really embrace hockey right now. Like I want to believe in that ideal, but I feel like that we've been talking about this for 25 years with like hockey in Harlem and shit like that. Like I feel like we've tried to make street hockey happen. Now maybe there's a different way of doing it. Maybe if you made it like 2-on-2 or 3-on-3 and you put a bunch of trick videos on YouTube and shit, like maybe there's a different way to do street hockey. But the idea of just like allow them to play street hockey and then they'll understand ice hockey and they'll want to watch the Devils is like never worked.
Yeah.
And so I'm a little bit that's where my cynicism comes in, is that that's going to be somehow the key that unlocks things.
Mine's the whole thing, because former Puck Soup guest, who actually I realize this, we follow 68 people on the Puck Soup account, so the next person will obviously be the nicest
follow.
But really, it should be Pete should have been 69, because Patrick Burke deleted his Twitter, and Patrick Burke is basically Andrew Ferentz, but like more aggressive,
right?
And everything. And Patrick, I'm not saying the NHL told him to delete his Twitter, but Patrick did delete his Twitter after being extremely vocal about all the things Andrew Ferentz believes in. So,
right,
vis-a-vis, if you're going to be forced to or feel pressured to delete your Twitter for standing up for all the things Andrew Ferentz says the NHL should be invested in because you're afraid of repercussions to your career for saying those things, why do I, again, come back to the idea that the NHL really cares about anything Andrew Ferentz
can do? And what you're essentially saying is this. If you're still going to be the lead that doesn't suspend Ryan Getzlaf for a gay slur because it's the playoffs,
or at least say something about it, man.
Or retroactively suspend him in the regular season like the MLB did for the dude on Houston.
Oh, for Gurriel, yeah.
Yeah, I mean like...
Well, Gurriel was... There was no way you could like play dumb with Gurriel, but right. He did. Like at least with Getzlaf, you can be like, oh, I never thought about how... What was the word he used again?
He said cocksucker.
Right.
Yeah.
Like you never really... That was the same thing. If I heard that word, I never would have thought about it until somebody pointed out. But... Still, it would have been nice if the NHL was like, hey.
Yeah, well, the real problem isn't that you have to reconsider it. The real problem is that you have guys in the NHL that are like, hey, what's wrong with that? That's most of my email subject headings when I write about my son.
Don't – yeah, seriously, fucking cold. Ah, boy. It's just such a backwards league.
Them teaching the goalies to dive is what them doing.
You know, starting to get into like old prospector territory with McCollum Campbell impression.
Ooh-wee-wee. I discovered a diamond in the rough. That diamond is everyone's trying to get my son. Jesus Christ. I'm just super cynical from the point of like, I just think it's a complete PR move and they're taking advantage of Andrew Ferentz's cachet with people. And I don't think they're really going
to. Coley, why are you in the middle of the ice with a pickaxe?
Oh, I'm going to find the black gold. Damn, there's black gold down there. Finance a whole new league with it.
Hate this league so much. It's
but holy, they're only called the Oilers because of the.
I don't care. What better place to look than underneath the Oilers?
How else am I going to pay for a retired referee to sit next to me for 7 hours on a Saturday to watch games? Like, I hope Andrew Ferentz does some good, man, but I just... again, the fucking Pope was like, hey, you know what, everybody, we should be more inclusive. And then 2 weeks later, they were like, let's go to the White House and hang out with the white supremacist president.
But
I just don't believe anything this league tells me, man. I just don't.
Ferentz brought up the Declaration of Principles in our conversation and saying, like, you know, they're not, we have to do better than just words in the paper. And, like, man, I really wish the Pope didn't get involved in that shit, because every time I think about the damn Declaration of Principles, I have to come back to the fact that fucking Pat LaFontaine stood up on a podium. He's like, this is all great, but I've got some real big news. The Pope has endorsed these. I'm just like, what?
The Pope. He read a letter from the Pope before the season started.
Pontiff, I know that there are many problems in the world. Poverty is running rampant, violence, people running away from the faith.
Children being
murdered. Where should we begin? I want to talk about the National Hockey League's Declaration of Principles.
That they just completely ignored immediately. That's what I mean. Like, Andrew Ferentz could, like, stand up in a conference room on the 15th floor of the NHL and be like, I believe that we should be inclusive with this and that and this and that. And everyone's going to be like, yes, absolutely. And they're going to be like, well, how are we going to kick off the NHL playoffs? Well, David Duke is going to want to do a speech before the first game. Wait, why? Why are we? I thought we weren't going to do that stuff anymore. Oh, well, we're going to have to hire another former player with progressive beliefs, I guess. Right. Like, I just thought, you know what you can't ignore, though? The fact that I have to kind of go to the bathroom right now.
Blue Apron. Blue Apron is the leading meal kits delivery service in the U.S. While many people know what Blue Apron does, many don't know the types of meals you eat when you cook with Blue Apron.
Hmm.
Like quick bucatini with broccoli and pecorino cheese.
Quick bucatini.
An Italian style. That's the Italian, the Flash in the DC Italian universe.
Let's say that's like
quick
that's
bucatini.
Like, that's like somebody screaming in like Italian broadcast when John Quick makes a save. A quick bucatini!
An Italian style shrimp and sweet pepper. With incredible ingredients and chef designed recipes, Blue Apron lets you see what the power of food can do. Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. Or, if you're me, probably around 55, because I never time things right. And I get very nervous about starting one thing while another thing is going on.
How's your oven in your place? My oven, I always have to, like, take off 25 degrees. My oven runs hotter than most
ovens. Borderline Pierre Maguire.
What do you mean?
How's your oven?
Talking today, my oven was made in Moose Jaw, Manitoba, 1984.
Phil, how's your oven? My oven doesn't run hot. My burners, because they're electric, run hot. I'm a gas heat guy, and we have electric burners, and I can never figure out what the fuck to put it on. Like 4.5 or 5, what's medium?
Right.
I can't figure it out.
I'm with you. Life's hard.
Blue Apron offers 12 new recipes each week, and customers can pick up 2, 3, or 4 recipes based on what best fits their schedule. I love to cook Blue Apron. I love the fact that, again, as I've mentioned before on this very show, I don't have to run to the supermarket and buy a bunch of ingredients I'm never going to use. They give you everything you possibly need, right down to the salt packets, so you can make delicious food in the comfort of your own environment. Blue Apron is treating Puck Soup listeners to $30 off your first order if you visit blueapron.com/pucksoup. So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off blueapron.com. That's blueapron.com/pucksoup. Do check it out. It is convenient and fun to cook during the week, and the food's delish. Blue Apron, it's a better way to cook, Dave Lozo.
Are you allowed to say delish when you're so anti-celly?
What the fuck was the word?
Chell?
Chell needs to die.
No, I know exactly
Chell
what you're
talking
about.
Chell needs to die, and celly, I tried my best to kill it, but it hasn't died. But the thing that we're thinking about now.
There's a new one, right?
Natty Hattie.
Natty Hattie.
Natty Hattie.
Somebody had a natty. Was it Huberto? Somebody had it.
Yeah. A natural natty. Hat trick for those who aren't speaking gibberish.
Natty Hattie.
Natty Hattie. The Chell I fucking hate.
It's the worst. That's the worst. One.
Like the NBA fans, if they shorthand it, call it the association. That's really cool.
That's also stupid.
And the MLB,
too.
It's like the show. That's really cool. Yes. We're going to go over being like.
The association is what you call like your fucking, you know, the guy who comes to pick up your car when it breaks down the side of the road. The association's stupid, too.
He's up in the Chell. We're going to watch some Chell tonight. We're going to play some Chell. Oh God! It makes me hate those two fuckers that do those videos.
Jay and Dan?
No. The guys who dress in like the one guy's in the Flames jersey, and they're like Albertans, and they do all the videos of the players. They're like off the bench or on the bench, or the fuck those guys.
Men in Blazers.
I feel like they are like they're the hockey guys that do those videos of the. I feel like they're
Steve
the purveyors
Dangle?
of this baby talk.
Dangle and Myrtle.
Yes, Dangle and Myrtle. Weekends on the Fan 590 in Toronto.
Dangle and Myrtle. WFA.
Speaking of radio, George LaRocque apologized this week for having gone on French language radio and saying that Taylor Hall was in rehab.
There are so many levels of that story that piss me off.
Yeah.
It's just, it's endless.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so, the thing we didn't plan to talk about, but the Vegas Golden Knights Twitter guy got fired. Right,
he didn't get fired.
He was. I was told he was fired.
Who are you told that by?
I can't tell you that. But I was told.
Tell
like,
me later.
But I was told like 2 weeks ago.
A while ago.
I
was told that he is exploring his future endeavors as well.
Yeah.
Fired is a strong word.
I was told he was fired.
But it was a parting of ways.
Yeah, like he was let go is what I was
Yeah,
told.
He was let go.
But like,
there you go. That's the term
yes.
I think we can agree
yes.
on. He was let go.
But like it's one of those things where I was told it 2 weeks ago. I knew it to be true.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't need to go on a podcast and like shout it to get like an extra couple of listens or retweets
yeah.
because, I mean, the guy who runs, first of all, I didn't like the Twitter.
Yeah.
I don't think you should have been fired for it.
Right.
It's comedy. Like I just didn't find his stuff funny. I don't think you should be
it's
fired.
It's kind of weird
it.
That it happened right before the playoffs, though, don't you think?
Right.
Yeah.
But like the point is just like if someone tells me that, I don't need to repeat it because it's a regular dude who works, you know, a job. He probably makes $60K a year. I'm not going to like breaking news, guy who runs social media account fired because
in Vegas, that's like $80K because
right.
of taxes.
But like, let's say someone told me Taylor Hall was in rehab 5 years ago, 3 years ago, whenever it was. I could double, triple, quadruple verify it. Find it to be completely true and you would never hear me say it because there's just certain things that
you don't
there aren't that's just not newsworthy. But to get it from one person and then just go on radio and tell everybody this thing is bad on so many different levels.
It's endless levels.
That I can't even begin to and then like he apologizes on Twitter for it, which is good. He realizes his mistake. It's fine.
Yeah.
And then there's people on Twitter who are replying to him and they're just like, you know what? This makes me like you more. Like, okay, I'm okay with you forgiving him and like we can all move on from it. It's fine if Taylor Hall's – but like, oh, man, you're even better than I thought you were.
You know what, journalist?
What are we doing?
Apologizing for your straight-up libel has made me really respect
you.
You know? Like, what is that?
And it's just like
– And you know why he did it. He did it to reinforce the narrative that Taylor Hall was a problem in Edmonton.
I know.
And it's just so goddamn petty. And he got it completely wrong. And he apologized. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry that I put it out there that you were in rehab and reinforced a stereotype of what people
yes.
think of you. And now there are people in Edmonton who will never see my tweet, but will remember when the story came out that you were in rehab.
But imagine like if you're a player who actually was in rehab or wants to go to rehab and then you it's supposed to be secret.
Yeah,
and
that's the real problem with
and
it.
And now like some agent somewhere who knows about it might tell some fucking ex-hockey player who has a radio show that he's going to go and repeat it. Like it's so fucking bad. I'm just...
yeah, I see. That's a quality sigh. You're out on Big George.
I always kind of like Big George.
Me too.
You know?
It's a major screw-up though.
It's just so bad. It's just so...
But again, I...
Like, what would happen to you at ESPN if you did that? If you reported
I would
that
not
story?
Be at ESPN.
I would
start every show. I'd be, I'm Greg Wyshynski, and I played Splatoon this morning before coming here.
I like how Splatoon's now becoming our new Dark Knight that you're going to mention every week. I was playing Splatoon.
We picked up Mario Kart because my daughter's here for spring break, and she's...
Spring break!
Big on Mario Kart, and... You know, like when you're stuck in an apartment with the kid all day because there's no school, gotta play some Mario Kart. But on the new Mario Kart for the Switch, they have a bunch of new characters for it, which is kind of fun. And I got yelled at by my 7-year-old because I kept on picking Green Shy Guy as my character. You know, Shy Guy from
Yoshi?
From Mario, like
Luigi?
the little guys that look like Jawas, but they have like masks on the front of them. So I kept on picking the Green Shy Guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I kept on doing really, really well. And she's just like, Daddy, you can't keep picking the same character over and over again. That's not why you play Mario Kart. I'm like, all right.
Were you just like, that's why I bought it. I will play it the way I want.
So I picked like Waluigi or somebody, like one of your favorites.
Mario's hilarious because I don't know why.
And then I came in 10th and I was fucking seething.
Sure.
I was seething at this little sabotager, this little saboteur who knew that I was at my strongest using Green Shy Guy and then fell apart using Waluigi.
Did she use Green Shy Guy after you bailed on Green Shy?
No, that would have been diabolical.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And I
What happened? You're looking at your screen. Did you just do something?
No, I might have told her to shut up when she said when she chastised me for going back to Green Shy Guy. She's like, "Daddy, you went back." I said, "Shut up." I think she got upset.
Listen, if you want to beat the best, you got to beat the best, and I'm the best.
All right. Speaking of beating the best, March Madness is still upon us. Obviously, we're all hoping the best for Sister Jean and Loyola of Chicago this weekend. Although you might not be. Are you out on Sister Jean?
I'm fine with Sister Jean.
Mm-hmm.
Old lady wearing a backwards hat and a wheelchair cheering for a basketball team.
More power to her.
What could you hate for it?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a part of me that wants them to lose in the next round just so, you know, someone brings up the Jesus maybe fumble conundrum of how a team can be powered by the Lord and then fall short of their goal. It always then becomes this was a lesson that we all have to learn versus God likes someone better.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
God loves Michigan's guard play too much.
Yeah, right.
To have Michigan lose.
God put hail to the victors in the mind of a composer many years ago, and it's clear that he is proud of one of his greatest creations. March Madness continues, so that's why we are going to participate right now in the Birth Movies Death presents the Great Franchise Wars bracket. We'll tweet this out so you can follow along. Basically, it's all the franchises and movies, and we're going to decide the ultimate franchise in movie history. Let's start with this bracket.
Okay.
Marvel Cinematic Universe and Jaws. That's your 1-8 MCU.
That's an MCU easy win. Jaws is better than any movie in the MCU, but the sequels, it's a problem.
Fast and the Furious, a 3 seed against the Halloween movies, a 6. A pretty easy one there, too, I think.
See, I was going to say Fast and the Furious.
Yeah, of course you are. That's why it's easy.
Oh, okay.
Now,
I didn't realize they seeded it upside down. Like,
yeah. Now it gets a little tougher. Actually, well, you have to remember, this is a bracket made by nerds.
This is a bracket made by nerds. 1-8 shouldn't play the 3-6 winner. They should play the 4-5 winner. What the hell is this bracket?
Here we go.
And the 7's on top of the 2. The 2 is on top of the 7. Who designed this?
Nerds did. They don't know how brackets work.
Idiot nerds. Good luck, nerds. What are we calling a nerd bracket, idiot?
Alien versus Star Trek. Now, Star Trek is interesting because you're dealing with the Shatner films.
It's all included,
and
right?
the Next Generation films. And the J.J. Abrams reboot. Alien, interesting, because you're dealing with the 4 Ripley films and then eventually a movie where Michael Fassbender fights himself.
I haven't seen that all the way through. Every time I put it on, the ship blows up and the Steve Prefontaine knockoff guy, what's his name, Billy Crudup?
Yeah, Billy Crudup.
Like, wants to run back in. And you're like, right. I get to that point, I'm just like, nope.
It's tough for me to watch that movie because Danny McBride's not making jokes the whole time. And I really would think that, like,
oh, yeah, he's in
Danny
that
McBride in an Alien movie making jokes is something I wanted to see. But instead, no, let's watch Michael Fassbender flirt with himself.
But I thought Danny McBride's, like, crying the whole time because his wife got down there. I'm going to go Star Trek.
I'll go,
I'll put Star Trek through. It's close because the first two aliens are great.
I think you have to go Trek here too because I think that if you're going to be honest with yourself, you have to rope in those shit fucking tastic Alien versus Predator movies into the Alien as well.
Yeah,
I'll go Trek.
Yeah, I got to go Trek, man.
Harry Potter versus Friday the 13th. Harry Potter quite easily there.
Yeah.
All right. Let's stay with the side of the bracket. MCU versus Fast and Furious.
Oh, we're pushing through.
Yeah, we're pushing through.
Oh, MCU.
MCU.
MCU's.
Star Trek versus Harry Potter.
See, I've never really seen a Harry Potter all the way through. I don't really have a strong... Like, I understand that people seem to... Twitter's ruined the movies. Twitter ruined shit. And I don't even enjoy Harry Potter, but every time, like, a politics thing happens, it's like, this is exactly like the Goblet of the Doom or whatever.
I think I go Trek here only because...
I'll let you pick this one.
I feel like Harry Potter is so... I think it's like Trek can be real preachy and self-serious, but also they had that one where they go to Los Angeles and try to save whales.
A, it was San Francisco.
Oh, sorry. You're right. I'm so all God.
B, it was it two whales or was it one? No, it was two.
Yeah, it was George and Gracie.
George and Gracie. Yeah, yeah. Hello, computer. Like, that Star Trek movie is better than anything in the friggin' Harry Potter.
I'm going to go Trek. I'm going to get so much shit for the ugly Trek. And then MCU beats Trek, because obviously. All right, other side of the bracket, Star Wars versus the DC Cinematic Universe.
Boy. How did the DC Cinematic Universe even get into this? There has to be a better... Like, why is Mission Impossible... Yeah, there it is, I was going
to
say.
Yeah, there has to be some other franchise. The Rush Hour franchise. The Rush Hour Universe Cinematic Universe.
Seriously, Rush Hour movie. The three Rush Hour movies are better than any of the DC Universe movies. Weekend at Bernie's 1 and 2 is better.
The Cocoon Cinematic Universe. Star Wars advances over DCU.
It's a blowout.
Mission Impossible versus the Chucky universe.
Mission Impossible. I was thinking about this. Like, there was a time when if you were doing a franchise, mm-hmm. if you fucked up the second one, you're fucked forever.
Yeah.
But like Fast and the Furious and Mission Impossible somehow overcame terrible second movies to just become dominant billion-dollar global forces.
And in the case of Mission Impossible, the one thing I always liked about it, although they're no longer doing it, was they handed each movie to a new director. And so, but the same guy who did the last one is doing the new one too with Henry Cavill's mustache.
Oh, is he in Henry Cavill's?
Yeah, that's why he had the mustache. That's why he had the whole Superman mustache thing was because he grew it for Mission Impossible.
I forgot that's what it was. Wait, is he the villain in this?
Yeah.
Ooh.
So Mission Impossible obviously advances past Chucky.
Absolutely.
Jesus Christ. Like, you have a problem with the DCU being in it. Fucking Chucky movies? Come on.
But those were really at least like original and stupid.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Rocky versus Indiana Jones. By the way, you could have easily had the Adam Sandler Cinematic Universe in this.
How about this? The Trading Places Cinematic Universe, because the Trading Places also appears in Coming to America.
That's right.
Those two. That's a cinematic
universe. The Eddie
Murphy
Cinematic Universe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's better than Chucky.
Indiana Jones versus Rocky. So here's the problem. Rocky V exists and Crystal Skull exists.
Which one was Drago? Four?
Four.
Okay.
So one through four are solid. And then, but okay. The first Rocky and Raiders, stone cold classics. Rocky IV, Last Crusade, movies of the people.
Mm-hmm.
Rocky II, or maybe, no, Rocky III.
Rocky III is the
Clubber
Mr.
Lang,
T, Hulk Hogan
At
one,
least
right?
good with, as Temple of Doom. But here's the problem. Here's the issue.
Rocky III is not great.
Here's the issue.
Give it to me.
Creed is part of the Rocky cinematic universe.
Oh,
and Creed.
I haven't seen Creed.
Potentially could push this over the top.
I watched Michael B. Jordan get knocked out by accident like 50 times though on Twitter.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was real the first 10 times I watched it.
I'm gonna put over Rocky here only because I think Crystal Skull was really bad.
So you have the shitty Rocky V with Touchdown Tommy or whatever.
Right.
That guy's name was.
Yeah, Tommy Gunn.
Tommy Gunn. Then you have all the ones where Rocky's old after that and fights. Like he fights the heavyweight champion.
Oh, Rocky
guy.
Balboa was also good.
Rocky Balboa wasn't good.
I think Rocky gets the rub here. What do you think?
It's tough because you have three great movies, one objectively bad movie.
Right.
Rocky, you have good Rocky 1, good Rocky 2, and Rocky
like
3.
Raiders
good
is,
Rocky 4.
Raiders is one of my favorite movies, but I think you could say that you could cross out Rocky in that for being seminal classics.
Here's what I'll do. I'll put Indiana Jones through knowing that it's going to lose in the second round because it's just that there's no hope for it in the next round.
I disagree, but the next round is the Elm Street movies or James Bond.
Yeah, it's
Bond.
Yeah, of course.
So Bond goes over either Rocky or Indiana Jones.
Yeah, there's too much good around. Like what's the worst? The worst James Bond? Timothy Dalton. Those are still enjoyable.
Those are still enjoyable. The worst James Bond movie is probably Moonraker. They go with the fucking space shuttle.
But like that gave us a plot point in Austin Powers, though.
It did.
So like,
and it also gave us a joke in Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, where Ben Affleck was in Moonraper, I believe it was.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Moon Raper.
All right. Well, Bond, you're right.
Yeah.
Bond. So Star Wars or Mission Impossible? Star Wars. Well, all right. Let's talk about this for a second.
Yeah. Now we got to put the brakes on here.
Okay.
Because
using the Indiana Jones theory, like the first three Star Wars, mm-hmm. unimpeachable classics.
And then you have the next
the
three.
Prequels.
Are bad.
Bad.
They're all bad.
Does that even it out? Because if it does, then Last Jedi and Force Awakens are really, really good and Rogue One's good for 25 minutes.
Force Awakens isn't that good. Rogue One's not good.
Last Jedi is great.
Haven't seen The Last Jedi.
Oh.
And then you have...
There's not a bad... Like, even... Mission Impossible 2 was bad because it was long.
And it, yeah, and there's, again...
And there's a lot of doves.
John Woo's got a weird dove fetish. John Woo loves doves the way Jason Segel loves puppets. It's uncomfortable for
like,
me how
like
much J.J.
Abrams
love
loves lens flare.
Yeah, like, what do you... I don't know.
So there's a lot of doves, and it's long. I think dollars to donuts, my friend. God, those fucking prequels. I think if because of the prequels,
I'm going Mission Impossible.
I'll go Mission Impossible as well. I think this is blasphemy and it hurts me on a very basic childhood level. But the prequels cancel out the original trilogy.
The prequels are insanely bad movies.
They're really bad.
Like pick the three worst Mission Impossible movies.
At no point is there a scene where Tom Cruise and Ving Rhames are walking in front of a fucking green screen with a goddamn Yoda CGI.
Also, too, you have to consider is the fact that when you watch the original Star Wars now, they always have this stupid George Lucas extra shit in it that weren't in the originals. Like yeah. The Jabba Palace dance party that happens for like 5 minutes on TNT now. What are we doing? Why are we showing that version?
What if behind Alec and Mark we put a giant lizard who is eating a giant fly and he's doing a jiggly dance?
By the way,
George, wouldn't that distract from the scene?
No! Oh, it's perfect. It shows the bustling metropolis that is Mos Eisley.
I want to put this out there to you because you're the Star Wars expert.
Please.
So you would know this.
Uh-huh.
Does Jabba fuck? If so, who or what does he fuck? And how does he do it?
Does Jabba fuck? Yes, because I believe his tail is his penis. Now, here's a question I'll throw back at you.
Oh, that's gross.
Based on the MCU, does Vision have a penis? I have an answer.
Does Vision have
If you remember when Vision was created in Age of Ultron, he gave himself a cape to look more like Thor. I believe he can manifest a penis when necessary. And when necessary, I mean when he needs to be with Scarlet Witch.
But is it like a 3D penis or does he just have a penis?
Yeah, it's like a 3D printing.
Is it always there?
No, he creates it.
Well, then he doesn't have one.
Why? You're saying it has to be there at all times.
It's a penis.
Okay, so he doesn't have a penis, but he can create one through 3D printing.
Oh, yeah, he can create anything. He's Vision. Like, that's the thing.
Right.
Like he has legs.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to create legs because he has them. He doesn't have a penis, right. So he has to create
it. Motherfucker has an Infinity Stone in his forehead. He can do whatever he wants.
You know why they call him Vision?
Why is that?
Because his penis only has one eye.
Oh, my God. That's so good.
See, out of one eye.
Mission Impossible versus Bond. Bond goes over because there wouldn't be a Mission Impossible without Bond.
Ah, see, this is where you lose me on your movie takes because you feel like the backstory and the origination of stuff is so much more.
I don't know why I just became Joe Pesci.
If we go with the prequels,
if we go,
they fuck you with the reboots and they fuck you with the sequels.
So, if we go with the same premise that eliminated Star Wars. Which is that Mission Impossible's success rate is
higher percentage.
We've had what now? Four or five movies? How many? Five,
six, right?
No, this is the sixth one. So it's De Palma, Wu,
one, two,
Abrams. Four was Brad Bird. That was
you're throwing out directors. I don't know which movies.
The fourth one was The Kremlin, and then the fifth one was Rogue Nation.
The fourth one was Ghost Protocol.
Fourth one was Gross Protocol. Fifth one was Rogue Nation. So we've had five, and one of them was sort of bad because it was too long and there were doves.
That was the second one, yeah.
Right, but the rest of them are fucking great.
So they're about an 800. Four for five.
Bond,
the plate.
Bond. I would say if you stacked up all the movies, the Bond batting average is lower than the Mission Impossible.
Well, yeah, I would have to, but they have more ABs, so you have to kind of say.
Yeah, I mean, you had like Brosnan, you had fucking Die Another Day and. Tomorrow Never Dies, you know, the Dalton movies or whatever.
I'll go Bond only because it created GoldenEye, the video game, while Mission Impossible hasn't created.
Your point's taken, and I think your point is that Bond has created more. It created Mission Impossible.
But, like, I don't care about it spawning other movies that are like it. It's also hard to judge, too, because, I mean, like, have you ever sat through, like, a 1968 Bond movie? I have.
The only one I will sit through is Goldfinger. Because it's fucking great.
See, I don't even know which one that is.
It's the one with the guy named Goldfinger.
It's a guy who has a finger made of gold.
No, they rob Fort Knox because he loves gold. He was the basis. Again, without Bond, we wouldn't have Goldmember or any of the Austin Powers.
They rob Fort Knox
franchise.
So he's Die Hard with a Vengeance. We're talking about it. Wait, why isn't Die Hard on this list?
Oh shit!
Hey, birth, death, movies, or whatever you are.
Where is
Chucky over Die Hard?
Where? Oh, and where's the M. Night Shyamalan universe? Huh?
Where M. Night Shyamalan always just shows
we
up.
We have three. We only have two. We have Unbreakable and Split. And there's going to be now the other one. But I guess we only have two in that universe.
Right. Split is a secret backdoor Unbreakable sequel. Right. Or prequel? Sequel.
Yeah, I agree with you on Die Hard. I don't know where the fuck Die Hard is in this.
Wait, hold on. All right, what if we took Die Hard and put it in Chucky's spot? All right. Then what are we doing?
Then you still have Mission Impossible.
Over Die Hard?
Yeah. Better. Dude. Die Hard did not stop at Die Hard 3.
Yeah.
You had one word fucking he's
Force.
Hanging out with the
Force
kid
fine.
From the, with what's his face from Justin, with Justin Long.
He's got Ramona he's, Flowers
and then there's one where even Jai Courtney running around Russia.
The Russia one's not good.
Yeah, it's
but that's
horrible.
That's the same batting average. It's
no.
4 out of 5.
No, I'll take Overlong and Doves over fucking Jai Courtney playing John McClane's son.
Jai Courtney is bad at everything, isn't he? Why is Jai Courtney in movies? How did that happen?
In fairness, greatest Captain Boomerang in Suicide Squad.
Right. That's who he is in that movie.
Right.
But, like, was he in, like, a TV show I never watched and then, like, he became a movie
he
star
was in
based
the,
off of that? Like, what's his origin story?
What's that one? Divergent. He was in that group of movies. Where's the Divergent universe?
Oh, he's one of the bad dudes, right, who tries to kill the good dudes?
Right, from the video game Bad Dudes, right?
Bad Dudes, rated R.
Starring. All right, I still think Mission Impossible knocks out Die Hard in that instance.
All right, we'll just go with it.
All right, Mission Impossible versus Bond. We say Bond. Bond versus MCU. We say MCU. The greatest franchise in all of movie history. Not only for what they accomplished in building towards these big movies, but also because what has been the bad MCU movies? What are they? They're not Iron Man 2.
Captain America.
God, shit.
Whatever.
I cannot deal with...
Captain America. Nonsense. I'm from Captain America: the Brooklyn Soldier.
Captain America: my friend Bucky.
Captain America:
World Police.
Need to save the Williamsburg Bridge.
Yeah. But would you say MCU over Bond, or is Bond the ultimate franchise?
I feel like it's just one of those things where everyone who's our age or younger will say MCU, and everyone who's older than us will say Bond.
I would surely say Bond.
There's like 65 Bond movies.
Bunch of. Shissy Mary is running around in capes.
Was Spectre bad? I heard Spectre was bad.
Spectre was fucking terrible.
Yeah. But it's got Christoph Waltz as the bad guy. How bad could it be? That bad, huh?
That bad.
Wow.
That bad. Because by this point, Christoph Waltz is now just playing Christoph Waltz in all these movies.
Again, another part of Horrible Bosses 2 that I just don't understand how that movie couldn't have been better. Christoph Waltz.
So there you go.
As the bad guy.
The MCU, the winner of the Great Franchise Wars bracket, courtesy of Breakdown Movies, which obviously is the official magazine of the Alamo Cinema and Draft House. We hardly endorse it. Mailbag time. We asked you, the people, to tell us your hockey confessions. Confess your hockey sins.
Confess. Do you confess?
And this was a really good, interesting one, to be honest with you, because
it was also kind of dark.
The last couple of these that we've done have gone very dark. Confess your hockey sins. Casey confesses that she doesn't know anything about the Eastern Conference. Together, we are the perfect hockey fan. She says to Sarah, maybe not, who I believe said she didn't know anything about the Western Conference. Mr. Jones says. Oh, wait. No, that was about Kenny Holland. I don't care. Craig Winter says, I can't skate and basically live in Minnesota. That's a pretty good confession right there. Emily writes in, this is in response to someone else. Inanimate Carbon God writes, it took me an embarrassing length of time to realize the Ducks logo was also a webbed foot and not just a stupid looking D, to which Emily says, same but the reverse with the Flyers logo. I assumed it was just some abstract emblem of flying until someone on the internet pointed out that it's the letter P. That's the Milwaukee Brewers disease of not realizing it's an M and a B.
Oh, it's a web foot. Look at that. It's like a little tiny web foot inside a bigger web foot. I didn't know that.
Jeff Orlando writes in, I still don't understand how escrow works in the NHL and why it's such a huge deal in CBA negotiations. Pretty sure if I figure out the first part, the second part takes care of itself. Our friend Nick Robb writes in, never caught a puck in my bare hands to impress a lady like Christian Slater did. Was that in Untamed Heart?
Marissa Tomei?
Yeah.
There's like a road. He's like a homeless guy or something, right? I like Eric Braun. I started out a New Jersey Devils fan. They got a girl. And once that ended, I lost interest in hockey. until I started regularly traveling to Pittsburgh in 2011 to visit friends and became a diehard Pens fan. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a good thing your friends weren't living in, like, Ottawa.
James Palmer writes in, I say I was at Game 6 of the Eastern Conference Final in 2012 to see Rico's biggest goal as Adam Henrique, but I was actually rooting with someone else in his basement. The euphoria clouded my memory for about 3 years afterwards. Lying that you were at a game you were not at, I think, is a very...
That's weird.
Confessable sin.
I don't know why you would do that unless you're trying to get out of, like, jury duty or like, you needed an alibi for, like, robbery or something.
Scott McGuire writes in, I've been watching the sport for over 30 years and I still don't quite understand offside sometimes. It just seems stupid to me.
Yeah, somebody else had that too in there. I think it was Vicky Foley who said she doesn't understand offside.
I also never notice coaching decisions when it comes to in-game lineup changes and double shifts. Matt Riegler. I've worn the jersey of multiple New York Rangers rivals just to make it hotter, but never my own. That shit's sacred.
To make it hotter.
To make it hotter. Like, make his body hotter?
He's sweating at the gym. Like, you put the extra garbage bag on you or something like that.
Ben Brown writes in, I am a hockey and Rangers fan solely because of the first NHL hockey game by EA on the Sega Genesis.
Well, like NHL 92?
I guess so.
Is that what it was? Yeah, the team was good then.
And this is an interesting one. This is from Rangers Report 2.0. I hated almost all of ESPN's hockey coverage. Gary Thorne and Bill Clement sucked. Buchagrass is pretentious and sucks. Melrose is a joke. Panger is somehow worse than he was as a goaltender. The only good parts were Steve Levy and the late John Saunders.
Wait, what's he confessing to? I don't understand the answer. He doesn't like ESPN hockey?
That's good, man. These are all really good. Follow the this is from Scott O. I guess I never paid attention and thought goaltenders handled their stick with their glove hand on top. I've been watching and playing hockey since I was a kid and had no idea until a couple of months ago.
What do you mean on top? That's not how you do it.
Finally, Ant Chalupa. I'm a Lightning fan that doesn't hate Brad Marchand. I'm sure this is what will finally get me thrown over the other side of Trump's wall. my confession, let me think. It used to be that I never actually saw a Mighty Ducks movie all the way through. But obviously we remedied that through the Patreon.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've said millions of times that I hate Slapshot and think it sucks. So that's not, like, a new
confession.
That's not a confession. I've never seen a hockey game in Montreal. I've seen more baseball games in Montreal than I have hockey games. Never been to a game in Toronto.
I think my confession would probably be I've never seen, outside of the Memorial Cup, which I legit watched on TV, I don't think I've ever seen an entire junior hockey game.
Neither have I. Don't really want to. I remember being in Canada for the first time to cover a playoff series, and this was like back when Brett Favre was every year retiring.
Yeah.
And I put on TSN SportsCenter with the RE instead of the ER, and they were like, coming up on SportsCenter, it was like, baseball season's underway, because it was April, the playoffs. Brett Favre looking around for a new job, and the OHL playoffs are underway. And then it was like, doo-doo-doo, and it's like, I'm JL Ray, and you're here to... And I'm like, oh, what's going on with Favre? And they went right to the OHL highlights, the start SportsCenter right. at like 11:01, and I'm like, oh my God, where am I?
Where am I?
Is this a real place?
Yeah, indeed.
And it was like 7-4 final.
All right, well, that's Puck Soup for this week. We want to thank no one for coming on. This was obviously a little solo skate for me and Lozo, as it should be many, many weeks.
Yeah, let us know how you feel about guests. I go back and forth. Like we're talking about, like, I love when we have a guest that we really want, but, like, you know, when it's some idiot like Pete Blackburn,
this is like
begging his way on.
Lozo, I believe, is...
I'm just kidding, Pete. I love you.
You've angled for a long time to try to get rid of guests, I think.
Not get rid of guests, but, like, not have to have one.
Not have to have one.
Like, you know, if we have someone that we really want or someone who really wants to come on, that's
and
great.
I really want.
You know what
He's
I mean?
He's a good guest.
I hate chasing people who are just like, oh, I love to come on, and then, like, it rains. And
but John Hamm.
John Hamm, for sure.
Yeah.
Margot Robbie, for sure.
That's what soured you, is the fact that we've had weather-related cancellations, I think, and we always show up here.
Not weather-related, but, like, we've had...
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know.
You know what I mean? Like, I just...
Coming up on the Patreon, the mailbag, coming up on the Patreon next month, Lozo and I have decided on what the bonus episode's going to be, and it's a fucking great one. For all of you people... I don't want to go into it. I don't want to give it away. I'll give away the cow. I don't want to give away the cow quite yet. It's good.
Don't have it, man.
Maybe we just gave away the cow. Our thanks, everybody, for listening. You can find me on Twitter @Wyshynski. Thanks to everybody who bought my book, Take Your Eye Off the Puck. It's still available. I keep on getting checks for it, which is a really good thing.
How does that work? You get like every month, every 3 months?
Every few months.
Quarterly?
I literally found one under a stack of papers recently. I'm just like, oh, look. I know.
You and your this is why you have your $35 burrito at Artisan Burrito.
That's right, at Artisan Burrito. At Culinary Spectrum, I believe, was the name of the place that you...
Yeah, but they spell burrito without the U to make it look trendy. Burrito.
Where can people find your genius, bud?
I don't have any anywhere.
All right, that's great. We will talk to you next week. We'll probably have a guest. Bye.
Do-do-do-do.
Support for today's show comes from Health IQ. Health IQ believes that the best way to improve the health of the world is to celebrate the health conscious through social and financial rewards. So they use science and they use data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health conscious people like runners and cyclists and strength trainers and vegans and people that aren't me. If you want to see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/soup. Or mention the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, when you talk to a Health IQ agent. That's healthiq.com/soup to get your free quote to secure lower rates on life insurance if you are a health-conscious person.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Bug soup.